Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, so today I'm pretty casual, fairly relaxed. There's not a whole lot going on. I've got my regular reporter, CJ, who's going to join us in the third hour. That's going to be fun. Tomorrow, however, is another story. Usually Fridays are pretty casual around here. Not too much is happening. We've got our regular folks. I haven't heard from Candace, Cowgirl Candace, for a couple of weeks. And I think she's probably not here tomorrow also. But we do have two special guests. One I'm still working with. The other one's already confirmed. And that's Tony Lyons. And Tony Lyons is the CEO of Skyhorse Publishing. He's the one that did the real Anthony Fauci RFK's book. Now, why that's of particular interest to me is because I want to get connected with RFK and see if he'll endorse our vaccine product liability bill, our big tech censorship bill, and maybe even our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money, which also would eliminate the Fed of the government owning securities and the ability to print money beyond expenses, or print money to meet expenses. And so these are game changers. These are huge. So I'm really curious what he thinks. Some other really cool things in the works that hopefully I'll tell you about next week. I'm really excited about some of the possibilities with Action Radio and our continued effort to explode upon the national scene with something really pretty dramatic. And so that's coming too. You know. Anyway, so my other thing I'm working on is tomorrow night. Tomorrow night I'll be at Matt Gaetz's 5:30 open house, open gates, whatever he calls it. It's going to be in the town of Jay in Florida. He seems to have there a whole lot. I'm not quite sure why. It's peanut and cotton farms and some really nice people, but it's quite rural. So I think he endeavors to cover the state. You know, he had an office in Fort Walton Beach, which is down near Destin, which is where the rich folks live. He has a new office in Crestview, which is a kind of cool town, but sort of in the middle of the district. The big city of his district is Pensacola, so he's there all the time. And he also heads up to the agricultural folks up in Jay. And so those are like the four points of the Matt Gaetz, you know, empire here in the congressional district of Florida. And so I'm in the town of Milton, which is near the city of Pensacola on the Gulf Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. And so it's kind of cool being here. I mean, I've never explored this area before I got here. I still haven't explored it now that I am here. I could do more traveling, but that's happening too. In the second hour, I was trying to think of something I thought would be appropriate to play from my vast WEBY repertoire. It was only a year and 4 months. In fact, I've been on Blog Talk, you know, I think 5 years now. But WEBY was only a year and 4 months. But in that year and 4 months, there was a staggering amount of amazing shows. And this is one of them. This is about a men's conference. So I figure it being Gay Pride Month, and although folks are calling it Pride Month, as I comment on Facebook already, calling Gay Pride Month Pride Month is like calling Black History Month History Month. You know, you're missing something. You're missing the whole point of it. So if it's really pride, you know, if LGBTQ plus is a source of pride, then why wouldn't you say your name? Just curious. Good morning, Marco. Excuse me. Good afternoon, Marco. Marco's with us on live chat from the Netherlands. And so we're just waiting for Warren to show up. He said he never would again. Hey Marco, how long do you think before Warren shows up to tell us we're all white supremacists and racists and everything else that's wrong with the world? It should be interesting to find out. Anyway, Marco's a tremendous help to the show because he looks up things for me while I'm on the air. Still working on a producer. Got some possibilities. As usual, I don't like to name names or you know, state things until they're actually happening. That's why I'm still working on a guest for tomorrow who I'll tell you about. Marcos is 1 hour maximum before Warren joins us. Warren promised, it's like the people that said they would leave the country if Trump ever got elected. Well, they're still here. It's the same kind of idea. It's an empty threat. But, you know, because he can't stand to be away from the publicity and trying to sabotage me. So I have my own antagonist or groupie, depending on how you want to characterize it. All right. So, again, tomorrow's really exciting. Now, Tony Lyons, I don't know a whole lot about yet, but I will by tomorrow. And Skyhorse Publishing, I think, is an interesting name. So, of course, I've already contacted Dan, Chief Dan Skyhorse, you know, Tres Locos Suta of the Creek band here in Santa Rosa, Florida. And so he was on the show a bunch of times. I wonder if I'll play this. It might be kind of fun to play the theme for Skyhorse Publishing just to let Tony know what's going on. Tony's interesting. He's got his own podcast. And that's going to be fun to hear. I'm wondering if he's going to be interested in what we do, which is citizen legislation. And so, again, I got Matt Gaetz tomorrow night, you know, who's our very well-known, nationally known member of Congress, who's on all the conservative media. Let's kind of speculate for a minute. If he starts the ball rolling, I'm not saying he will, but if he does, I'm hoping he does, starts the ball rolling on this congressional constitutional amendment to end Congress borrowing money, this is game-changing. This is earth-shattering. This is brand new. Nobody has ever proposed this formally. People have talked about it. I know because I did some research before I wrote the amendment. People said, yeah, wouldn't it be interesting if Congress stopped borrowing money, or how do we get Congress to stop borrowing money? So, you know me, I have to take the next logical step and say, okay, well, let's stop Congress from borrowing money. That's what Jefferson wanted. Jefferson never wanted the ability to borrow money in the Constitution, and we would have been a lot better off because of it had that gone through. And so think about it. Why does Congress borrow money? Well, they borrow money because they can't, you know, budget properly. That's why they borrow money. Or they borrow money because they want more money for campaigns and to reward people's special interests. None of those are good reasons, right? And so the usual reasons for borrowing money that people claim, well, we need it in case we have a war. Really? If you have a war, you should have enough in savings to fight it quickly. So the incentive is, if you can't borrow money, is to get the war over with as quickly as possible, which usually results in the least loss of life. However, if you can borrow money, you can keep Afghanistan going for 20 years. You can keep Iraq going for probably still. You can start a war in Ukraine, which apparently has been in the works for years. And you can have another one in Sudan and who knows where else. You know, the permanent war class, the people that always want us to have war somewhere, really depend on borrowed money. So if you get rid of the borrowed money, you probably would eliminate a whole bunch of wars. Well, not even wars. They're just, you know, they're just military-industrial complex investments. That's what it is. And the fact that people die along the way, you know, it's kind of, you know, incidental or collateral damage, I think they call it, or something like that. Anyway, point being, if you stop the borrowing, you're probably going to stop a lot of wars. What else would you stop? Well, they say, what happens in the next pandemic? You know, they borrowed $7 trillion to fight COVID. But was any of that money needed? No. Because, you know, what was needed was the First Amendment. The way to solve COVID, we could have solved COVID in about 6 months maximum, because that's what the CDC says. If you'll notice, every time I post the slides to a show, there's a chart there. That's the CDC death chart of COVID. See, after that chart, they go into cases because they can't prove the deaths anymore. And with the real cause of death, ventilators. You know, bacterial pneumonia from ventilators. So the ventilators were infecting people after they were put on the ventilators because of remdesivir, which caused kidney failure, which caused everybody's chest to fill up with fluid. So they put them on a ventilator and they got pneumonia and died. That's what killed people in the hospitals. So people died by hospital protocol of pneumonia. You know, so the actual COVID death, but they list them as COVID deaths, you know, keep the fear going. So the way to solve COVID was always the First Amendment. Freedom of information, freedom of information on hydroxychloroquine, on ivermectin, on vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, you know, the Zelenko protocol. We need the cure for COVID at Action Radio at the beginning of March of 2020, 2 weeks before the so-called 15 days to slow the spread, we were broadcasting the cure. And we were broadcasting there was no pandemic. We were absolutely right. And I keep saying this, you know, to get the message out that we were right. And a lot of other people were right, too. It wasn't just us. And I didn't make this stuff up myself, but I follow the trends. You know, I look to see what's going on, and I, you know, you sort of after if you've been doing this long enough, you can see the signals. You know, when Dr. Fascist, all he talked about was vaccines. There had to be an agenda. Okay, why does he want vaccines? Why does he want only vaccines? We know we have early treatments, but he's blocking the early treatments. Why is he blocking the early treatments? Well, because he makes millions of dollars on vaccines, and so does Big Pharma, and so does you know, Dr. Fascist and the health Nazis in our government. They made money off this. And so did big tech, because they invested heavily in pharmaceuticals, so they made money off this. The media, you know, got millions. What I just shared the other day, that Anderson Cooper, well, there's a white name if ever there was one. You know, that'd be like, you know, Biff Wellington III. You kind of thing, right? So Anderson Cooper of CNN, the Communist News Network, he made $11 million a year. Or was it $12 million? He made $12 million a year. $12 million a year, right? $12 million. $12 million a year, you know, for lying. It's pretty good work if you can get it, right? Well, $9 million of that $12 million came from Pfizer. Well, that's interesting. So all these folks are paid off by Pfizer to lie about the cures, and so they're partially responsible for a million people dying. And good luck with your conscience there, Anderson Cooper. Hope you enjoy your $9 million a year from Pfizer. You're partially responsible, you know, for killing a million people. Well, you have to live with that. I don't. My conscience is clear. I was broadcasting the truth the whole time, and I didn't get $9 million from Pfizer. But I got a clear conscience, and that's worth more. Although I certainly could use the $9 million because I want a jet. You know, but I'll get my jet the old-fashioned way. Honesty, truth, good journalism, even though I'm not a journalist. So let's put good activism. So that's fascinating. But in fact, I wrote an article on this on Substack, that the cure for COVID was freedom. So if we had freedom of information, there would have been no pandemic. So there was no reason to borrow $7 trillion because freedom of information would have had COVID gone by mid-July. No vaccine, no ventilators, no problem. Would some people have died? Sure. But people die of a cold. People die, you know, slipping on their sidewalk in front of their house in the wintertime. People die from all kinds of things. Everybody dies of something. You're not going to eliminate death, you know, but you can reduce it a whole bunch by simply going with early treatments. And we all knew that, but they wouldn't let us tell that story. So we told it anyway. So anyway, there's no reason to borrow money for a pandemic because freedom works and you can't quarantine the healthy people. That's unconstitutional. So if they'd follow the Constitution and if they had the free access of information, COVID would have been done. And there's no reason to borrow money. So if there's no reason to borrow money for a war, there's no reason to borrow money for a pandemic because freedom is the cure. Freedom is the cure in both cases. Freedom is the cure for war too. You know, because you don't wage wars unless you have a congressional declaration of war. Well, without that, you don't go. You don't spend money. You know, and Congress should stop that, but they don't because they don't work from freedom. They'd rather borrow money because they're part of the military-industrial complex. They make money off it too. And they get elected because of all the money spent in their districts by military contractors. So the cure for most of everything is following the Constitution and freedom. So there's no reason for Congress to borrow money. None. There's nothing that can't be solved with the current budget. We've got trillions of dollars that we could have in our treasury if they stop spending on stupid things. You know, money for floods, we've got money for hurricanes, we've got, you know, money for, you know, hydroxychloroquine tablets during the next coronavirus pandemic. Easy, cheap. What, 20 cents a pill? Nothing. You know, so none of these things are a problem. There's no reason to borrow money, so that's why I wrote the amendment. All right, that's kind of thing. So the government causes the problems. Most of our problems are caused by government. And some of the bigger ones, but they blame something else. One of the big things going on right now is fires in Canada. Why do we have fires in Canada? Global warming? Climate change? Really? So how do you explain fires in wintertime then? You know, fires do not require heat. They don't require warm weather to get going. You know, you can have fires anytime. Fires generate their own heat. I don't know if you've noticed, and the last time you were close to a fire, they're pretty hot. Fires do not require, I mean, just to use simple logic. Fires do not require heat to get going. A warmer situation will not make a fire. But what really happens is a hot, dry, windy situation with fuel and ignition. There's three parts to a fire. Oxygen, fuel, and ignition. You need all three. Okay. Heat by itself will not generate fire unless you get hot enough for something to burn. And I'm not sure what the burning temperature of wood is, but it's a lot higher than the hottest day of the year. A lot higher. So wood burns when it catches fire. Wood is a fuel. You know, and we have oxygen in the air. That's part two. So the third source is the ignition. And none of these have to do with climate change. So climate change is irrelevant to fires. It's not a big deal. I find it interesting that the fires in Canada are in the springtime and the fires in the lower latitudes are in the fall. So let's go to my favorite source on this, the CO2 Coalition, run by my friend Gregory Wrightstone, who says in his latest episode of stuff from their information website. And you go to CO2 Coalition. I'm on the mailing list, so I get all this stuff. He says, Canadian fires. If you are living in eastern Canada or the northeast of the United States, you are experiencing quite smoky, hazy skies, the result of fires in Canada. Well, as a side note, we used to get smoky skies in California every year because they burned the rice fields. Oh, no, they burned the rice fields. And so all the husks, you know, of all the rice, was burned and put into the air. So when I used to teach flying, you could always tell when the rice fields were burning. First of all, it smelled like rice in the air. That was kind of weird. And secondly, the air was really smoky. So as a flight instructor, we tended to avoid the fires. We don't want to get all that crap on our engine. Anyway, so he says the fires have spread from northern Alberta eastward into other provinces, including Quebec, generating alarming press coverage. Oh, yeah. So the coverage is alarming, not the fires themselves. But the coverage is very alarming. He says a headline from the Washington Post claimed unprecedented Canadian fires intensified by record heat and climate change. Like I say, fires generate their own heat. This is a bunch of nonsense. Then it says, fires in the northern latitudes of Canada are quite different from fires in other parts of the world, as I previously stated, including the western United States. The lower latitude fires are often the result of grass and brush that grows lushly in the spring and early summer and then dry in the heat and aridity, that's dryness, of late summer and early fall. Yes, our worst fires in California were in October. Hot, dry, the winter rains hadn't started, and that's a perfect situation for fires, right? Article says northern fires peak in the spring. For example, May is the peak month in Alberta. Oh, that's interesting. That is because in the high latitudes, in other words, north or south, depending on which way you go, in the high latitudes, after long, cold winters, there is plenty of dead fuel from the previous year that dries out in the several weeks between the melting of winter snow and the beginning of spring rains and new growth. According to Canada's Department of Natural Resources, fires have been occurring for thousands of years. Unprecedented? Yeah, right. Thousands of years, okay, in the boreal forest. I'm not sure what boreal means. I can look it up, or maybe Marco. What does boreal mean? B-O-R-E-A-L. It probably means northern forests. Anyway, so the boreal forest of eastern Canada, not exactly unprecedented. In addition, they call a fire a primary change agent that is crucial to forest renewal as the sun and rain, perhaps not a calamity either. Yeah, fires are essentially part of the cycle of life in the forest. Now, I taught this as a tour guide. And when we used to go see the redwoods, and you'd see the bottom 10 feet of a redwood tree would be black, whereas the redwood trees, the rest of them are red. Well, the bark is red. Okay, so why were the bottom black? Well, fires. But they only went 10 feet of a tree that might be 300 feet high. These things are huge. It's really pretty amazing. Anyway, so you got a 300-foot tree, and the bottom part is burned with fires. But is the tree dead? No. Why? Because the bark of a redwood can be up to a foot thick. That's a lot of bark, right? And it's completely resistant to fires. Yeah, it burns. It turns black, but the tree's fine. Tree doesn't care. Tree's like, I got redwood bark. So redwood trees are particularly fire resistant. In fact, it takes a fire to germinate a redwood tree because the ground has to be cleared. Redwood trees need constant sun their first couple of years. Well, the only way to ensure constant sun is to have no plants around. And the only way to ensure no plants around is to burn the area. So after a fire, the cone of the sequoia or the giant redwood, the coastal redwood, those are two big trees. The sequoia and the coastal redwood are the two main redwood trees. Well, the cones of those trees don't really open up unless it's incredibly hot and dry or right after a fire. That's when they open up because the ground is clear. So they open up, the seeds drop on the ground, and they do their thing, and they start growing little redwood trees. Well, if it suddenly, if other plants grow up around them and they're in the shade, they're going to die. But once they get above the rest of the plants, you know, it's probably about 6 feet, and they start growing, then chances are they're going to be okay for the next 2,000 years. It's a pretty interesting life. Anyway, so a lot of things are going. So fires are necessary. Fires clear the ground. Fires create fuel, put nitrogen back in the soil and do all kinds of other things. So fires are a natural part of the forest. So the idea that the Forest Service, Smokey the Bear, has to stop all fires was ludicrous. Because by stopping all fires, what you do is you get the fuel building up more and more and more. Then you get massive fires. You're going to have a fire sometime. The only question is, are you going to have yearly or every other year or every third year, you know, low-level fires kind of cleaning out the underbrush? Or are you going to have massive fires because you haven't had a fire for 50 years and all of a sudden all that fuel has to burn at once? And the tops of the trees get burned and all the trees get burned instead of a low fire kind of working its way along the ground. That's the difference. Anyway, nature knows best. Leave nature alone. Chances are it's going to be fine. It's been here for millions of years longer than us and does quite well. Thank you very much. All right, so the next thing here, it says, according to Canada's, I think I already said that. Yeah. All right, here we go. It appears that 2023 is on pace to be a year with unusually high numbers of fires. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, the previous year was one of historically low numbers. Oh, I guess that was unprecedented too, but they don't say that. The Canadian National Fire Database 2023 provides facts to dispute the idea of climate change-driven increases in fires in Canada. According to the CFND, the Canadian National Fire Database, who knew there was one, right? There's been a significant and continuing decline in the number of fires and no discernible trend in the area burned. So if a whole bunch of fires decline and then 1 year they get excessive, it looks like, oh no, we've got so many more fires. They're unprecedented. Oh yeah, so was the decline beforehand. All right. So NOAA, that's the National Organization, what is it? National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association, NOAA, promotes fear of too much CO2. Well, I think CO2 is being released with these fires because all the CO2 locked up in the carbon of the wood gets released when they burn. Well, that's not bad. We need CO2 for other plants to breathe, to create more plants. So forest fires contribute, put CO2 back in the air. That's a good thing. Anyway, CO2 Coalition says, just today, NOAA began warning of the looming dangers of unprecedented levels of carbon dioxide not seen in millions of years. Yeah, because millions of years ago, we had a lot of carbon dioxide, and the world was really healthy. You know, the dinosaurs were roaming, and, you know, the polar ice caps weren't ice caps. They were green or palm trees at the North Pole. And the world did just fine, right? Anyway, he says, oh, then they got the other stuff going on. As a subscriber to our newsletter, you likely know that CO2 has been at suboptimal levels, in other words, below good, for plant growth for those millions of years. Yeah. The recent additions of the miracle molecule mean that plants are flourishing more than they have in thousands of millennia. We should celebrate that. Learn more facts about CO2, you know, from our informational website. So there you go. So CO2 Coalition says we need more CO2, lots more CO2, and we'll be much better off. Okay, that's first of my mini articles here. Second one is, and I'll take a break after this one. Second one I found really interesting, too. I just found this morning from my many subscriptions, and this is from Dr. Mercola. USDA, that's the United States Department of Agriculture, phony animal welfare rule and other shenanigans. So they're screwing around with our organic food, all right? It's not organic anymore. They're changing how they do things, and this is criminal, too. So this might be a place we need to take some action. So it says, and then let me see if I got the date of the article, June 8th, so yesterday. No, today, I'm sorry, today's the 8th. Dr. Joseph Mercola today, so this would have been released this morning, hot off the presses. Wow. Let me play my hot off the presses thing. So let me see if I can just do this. Here we go. And now, hot off the presses. At a time when organic farmers are going out of business and being gobbled up by corporate agribusinesses by the hundreds, draft regulation currently under consideration would legalize factory farm conditions for organic chickens, thereby pushing even more of the smaller organic farmers out. Yeah, we need to protect our organic farmers. And there should be I've got to look into the thing. We need to get rid of all the agricultural subsidies. We need to make it harder for big agribusiness. We should make it impossible to buy smaller places. Or something. I don't know if I want to do that. We still have a free market. I'll have to think this through. But there's got to be a way to protect small organic farmers. And I think the biggest way to do it is to make the big organic farmers, you know, obey the same rules and policies and regulations that the small ones do. You know, and so that should be interesting. Well, let's see how to do that. I need to do some more farm research. Anyway, it says, while the proposed rule, you know, when we talked about rules, we talked about rules yesterday, right? We talked all about rules, that these agencies, you know, who work with lobbyists just crank out rules, and Congress, you know, to a large extent, doesn't have any role in it. Well, here's a place where Congress should have oversight, all right? So this should go to the Agriculture Committee. Do you really want to change the rule on organic chickens so the big agribusiness can make inorganic organic chickens and pass them off as organic and put all the real organic farmers out of business? Do you really want that? Well, if they're taking money from the lobbyists, then of course they're going to do that. But that's how we need to take the lobbyists out of Washington. So that's going to be a big job. First step is stopping them borrowing money. We'll work on some of the other things, too. I can only imagine what Matt Gaetz is going to say to me when I tell him that. He says, yeah, Greg, what else do you want me to do? Well, I do have some other bills, sir. It's going to be funny. All right. So the article says, well, while the proposed rule claims to protect and improve, quote, animal welfare, all it will accomplish is the further destruction of independent organic farmers who do things right and therefore cannot compete with the organic mega corporations that can sell their food at far lower prices because they cheat on the organic standards. Let me say that again. They cannot compete with organic mega corporations that can sell their foods at a far lower price because they cheat on the organic standards. He says, this is Dr. Mercola, says there are two kinds of organic. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service, in 2019, 9 organic certified corporate-owned confined animal feeding corporations, CFAOs, in Texas produced 1.5 times more organic milk than all the 530 family-owned organic dairy farms in Wisconsin combined. That's crazy. That shouldn't happen, right? As of 2021, there are 13 corporate dairies in Texas with organic certification, and they're producing 2.8 times more, quote, organic milk than the remaining 407 organic farmers, family farms in Wisconsin. In those 2 years, 123 family farms went out of business in Wisconsin, as did hundreds more in other states. So we've got to find a way to preserve the small farms. We need a Small Farm Preservation Act. I'm going to write that down here. Hang on. We have a lot to do. So if you know big foundations that support Heritage and Cato and things like that, massive donors, send to us. We have work that we can actually do, as opposed to these guys, you know, going to their luncheons. So 6823. So let's put here small organic farms. Small organic. Part of the reason I'm doing this today is because I want to. Hopefully, CJ will get a hold of this and talk about this in her show, which will be in the third hour. So getting through the first half hour of the first hour. Project Protect Small Organic Farms Bill. There we go. So, big note to myself: use blue and red. Contrasting colors makes it more visible next time I read my notes. So there we go. So as 2019, we lost 530 farms. 2021, we lost 407 farms. Well, that's almost 1,000 farms. Anyway, it says when small organic farms go out of business, it's not just that family that loses something. Consumers also lose. They lose access to authentic organic milk that meets their environmental expectations, and they're deceived because they think the higher price they pay provides economic justice and reward for farmers who are doing things right. Yeah, I think so too. However, it says, meanwhile, most of the organic milk available comes from CAFOs. Once again, that is corporate-owned confined animal feeding organizations. Pretty disgusting thing. In other words, they box up animals. You know veal? They box up veal in tiny boxes. They box chickens up, too. Ever been to Chinatown in San Francisco? Hey, listen, you know, don't call me anti-Asian. It's not going to work, all right? If you go to – it's disgusting, quite frankly disgusting, the way that things are done. In some parts of Chinatown, the animals, chickens are confined in tiny little cages. They're stacked up, you know, like things you see at Costco, you know. And so and it's really, you know, I've seen things I won't even describe on the show in the Chinese markets. And so I'll just let your imagination run wild on that. Bianca's on the line. Get you in just a little bit here. This is most. Meanwhile, most of the organic milk available comes from the CAFOs that have anywhere from 10,000 to 20,000 cows with a density of 5 to 10 cows per acre that roam in desert conditions. The scene on these factory farms is as far from idyllic farm life as you can get. Yeah, remember the Happy Cow ads from California? I don't know if you guys saw them out here in Florida or the rest of the country. We used to have Happy Cows, and they showed these blizzard whiteouts in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin cows weren't happy. But the Happy Cows, and there's a little teenage girl, she was like 14 years old, you know, our cows are outside. I haven't seen that ad for a while. Anyway, but yeah, so they try to show you how happy these cows are in these lush green environments. Well, it's not the case. Listen, I used to drive by the factory farms in California on I-5 and 99, and they were hot, dry, dusty, and they smelled of cow poop because that's what they were. They were factory farms, you know, feedlots. And they were disgusting. There are mounds of cow poop on dry land, and the cows ate from these, you know, big things. And it sort of turned me off beef for a while. So I got to find a nice grass-grown beef and, you know, start eating beef again. Anyway, meanwhile, it says most of the organic milk available comes from CAFOs. I read that. Okay. Unlike on a family farm, these CAFO cows don't graze on grass in a pasture. Rather, pasture grass is cut and then fed to the cows as shown in the picture below, and I've already posted this. I think I posted this event. I'll post it after the show. When actual pasture size is considered, the effective stocking level can be as high as 20 cows per acre, whereas family farms typically provide 1 acre per cow. Very interesting. Let's get Bianca in the line and find out what he thinks of either CO2 and the fires in Canada or the organic farms that are screwing up because they're actually catering to these factory farms. Bianca, good morning.
Well, there should be hands off the Amish and the Quakers.
Well, that's just part of it, though. I mean, I agree. So I should probably put them there. One of them right there, Amish and Quakers. Have you been to Amish and Quaker farms?
A long time ago.
Okay.
I've had the opportunity to study it, but no, you leave those people alone. They do what they want to do for what they want to do it for. They don't advertise. People come to them and request to have access to some of their products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
but it's not just the Amish
FBI
and the
want to raid them. Well, yeah, the FBI want to raid them. That's just totally deplorable. They don't even use, they use push mowers, lawn mowers.
Yeah.
So look, and you leave them alone.
It's not just the Amish and the Quakers. Yeah, it's more than the Amish and the Quakers. I mean, it's a good point. It's an excellent point. I should definitely include them in the bill. But these are small farms. So the small farms do things right. They don't have the economy of scale. Like, I get my eggs from a friend of mine, has his own chickens. I know the feed they use. I know the chickens. I know where they're kept. You know, so I'm really lucky. I have a good source of eggs, but not everybody has access to that, especially in the cities, because there aren't a lot of places to keep chickens in the city. This is why I like living in a more rural area now, so I can do these things. When I find a local grass-fed beef producer, maybe I'll go to them. You know, all the fish I eat is wild-caught. So I got organic eggs, real organic eggs, not factory organic eggs, but real ones, and wild-caught fish, and, you know, organic produce as much as I can. And I'm feeling pretty good. Now, don't eat processed food. You'll never see potato chips or cookies or cakes or brownies or things like that. They just don't. My only sugar is organic honey, raw honey. And so I'm doing pretty well. I'm trying to. And I've got rid of all the seed oils. So you won't find any cottonseed, rapeseed, you know, soybean stuff, any of the soy or seed oils. You won't have that. And my mayonnaise is now avocado oil-based mayonnaise. So I'm getting rid of the seed oil. So all this, I'm gradually working my way, you know, for a completely organic diet. Not quite as bad as CJ. She really goes. She soaks her strawberries in baking soda. I'm not that far yet, but you know, there's a lot you can do, and I feel pretty good.
Well,
how, how's your organic?
You know, we have cows around here. Uh-huh. They graze, and then before they slaughter them, they take them into areas where they're fed corn. They put some fat on them in order to add flavor to the meat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they call it finishing. How do they kill cows? I mean, I'm not really sure how they do it. How are cows slaughtered these days? Do you know? Because I have no idea.
Wave their hand over when they fall dead.
Is it electric? Is it some kind of massive?
You know, you hit them in the head with a ball peen hammer. You hit them in the head with a ball peen hammer and kill them.
Really? Huh. Yeah, a lot of people talk about hammers. People don't realize hammers are dangerous. You can easily kill a person with a hammer.
Yeah, they are dangerous. They kill a cow.
Huh. Yeah, I thought it was like some large bar was dropped on their head or neck or something like that. I'm not trying to get graphic. I'm not doing this for no reason, but I think people should know. How do they kill chickens then? These mass factory farms.
They evacuate them. Cut their throat.
Huh.
And then they bleed out.
I know the
thing about it, if you cut the throat, they bleed out.
Huh. Because I know with the chicken, you just literally wring their neck. I mean, you just twist their neck and you can kill them really easily. People have done that for thousands of years. But
then they have the halal way of doing it, which is pertinent with the Muslim culture. They have a cone where the chicken next to them can't see the other chicken.
Right.
Supposedly it's supposed to stop the adrenaline. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's their technique and their traditional way of doing things.
Yeah, I think kosher meat is a similar kind of way, isn't it? I mean, or is it? I know it's blessed by a rabbi, but how is kosher meat prepared?
I believe it's the same principle, where the bird is not put under stress,
mm-hmm.
and the death comes quick and swift.
Yeah. It's like I've been in places with a lot of seafood, and I grew up around Boston and San Francisco. And for those folks that are trying to be conscientious but still tossing a live animal into boiling water, usually put them on their back. You know, you kind of tickle their belly a little bit, and they tend to relax, and it's like a hypnotized state. And so when they're tossed into boiling water, they're somewhat relaxed going in. I mean, I've done it. I don't know if I'll do it again, you know, but because it's a strange feeling to do that. But on the other hand, lobster tastes really good, so I don't feel like I should, you know, have never had the experience of basically killing an animal I'm going to eat. Same thing goes for hunting. I mean, I'm curious to kill a deer, or clean a deer, and do the work myself. If I'm going to have meat, then shouldn't I know how the process works? That's something I've thought about for a while.
It's the same principle.
Yeah.
Except for deer, you kill it. If you shoot a male, the first thing you want to do is cut off the scent glands. Then you gut them. And you hang them up. You can hang them up for about a week if you want. And take
what
off the skin. Huh?
What does hanging them up do? Just drains all the blood out?
Well, yeah, it drains the blood out. The organic decay process begins. It kind of tenderizes the meat a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah, they don't do it for too long. I remember when I was up in Alaska, I took my daughter up there. We flew up to the Antivik Pass, which is an Inuit village about 150 miles north of the Arctic Circle. That's as far as we got. We didn't get all the way up to Prudhoe Bay, but we got pretty far up, far enough that they had caribou skins hanging over the railings on the stairs. And the caribou, the carcass was in their freezer, which literally was a dugout, you know, because they had permafrost up there. So the ground never thaws out, and so it makes the perfect freezer. So the ground's always, you know, 32 or lower. And so they toss the meat, you know, right there in a dugout place, you know, low enough in the ground that it's still at freezing temperatures, even in the heat of summer, which gets all of like 50, I think it's like 52 degrees when we were there, and it was hot. It was like, whoa. They get some serious winters up there, but it was interesting. But we were there during the caribou harvest, and they were out there. You know, it's like, and this is how these folks live, and they're, you know, this is what works. Caribou come by because there's not a lot out there. If you've ever been to the tundra, there's not a lot of life out there unless it wanders by. And when it does, you know, you got to take advantage. So they do. Hmm.
Well, that's the way it works. You know, there's a power on the food chain, and then you got those that's lower on the food chain. That's the nature way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. We still have to be responsible.
And I think men, like the FBI, need to leave it in hell alone. They got other things they could be doing.
Well, who would pay the FBI? Why would the FBI be paid to raid the Amish? Who could have done that except the agricultural companies? There's no government interest in that. That had to be by the farm lobby.
Well, they take it. Well, they have a client. Well, they have one thing, they have big families. You know, I tell you what, there was an issue with them having a lot of kids, too, at one time. I can't remember the story, but that was a discussion. But they have large families. Then they have people in other parts of the society that would come to them for their food, whether it's their baked products, their honey, of course, their milk, their meat. They don't advertise. I don't think you ever hear them advertising on store.
Well,
I mean,
as far as electronic
news.
Media, they're not going to use the electronics to advertise. They don't have to. But I'll tell you, the world's finest salad dressing, I had this bacon, I don't know what it was, vinegar or something, honey dressing that they made in Amish country. I've actually been there. We all joked about the town of Intercourse, Pennsylvania. Intercourse used to mean conversation, folks, or commerce. It's not the meaning has changed a little bit. But, yeah, you get to Lancaster or some of these other places near where the Amish are. It's fabulous culture. I love to do a show from there. So I have, in some of my plans, I had this desire to hit the road probably for up to a year and just bring my show with me and just go. Bring the computer, talk to people from all over the country, put them on the air, maybe do videos at the time. And I'm not sure how – I haven't figured all the details yet, and I can't leave yet. I'm going to have a pretty massive travel budget. But I would take the show on the air and go meet all these people that we talk about. And let's see what's going on. Yeah, and then write regulations.
There's
right
a market.
There's
a market in Philadelphia, if I'm not if I got my cities right, that has ethnic food vendors. And the Quakers have a spot, and you can go there to this spot. You can buy fresh orange juice. You know, they put the whole orange in.
Where do you get oranges in Pennsylvania? It's not really a good orange-growing country. So it's interesting. They'd have to bring them in from somewhere further south.
Yeah, and one of my favorites is apple dumpling.
Mm. They do
so
have apple
a lot of things that they have that you don't normally find. That makes for a great day. And the orange juice don't last long, so you got to it's natural, so you have to consume it as fast as you can. I mean, not all in one day, but it just can't sit up, you know, 2, 3, or 4 days, no.
Yeah, that same thing with avocados. You get a good avocado, it's only good for about 8 hours. You've got to catch it at the peak ripeness. You know, before it's too hard, you can't eat it, and after that it gets too soft and stuff, you know, turns brown. So there's like an 8-hour window. So when you buy avocados, you've got to, if you want to have them for a few days, you buy one to eat today, one that's not quite as ripe for tomorrow, you know, one that's green for 3 days from now, and it'll be fine. So you got to be careful. But you actually do it. I'll bet you there are different species of apple that you find with the Amish and with the Quakers, because there used to be 140 some odd species of apples across the country. Local, regional, they developed their own, you know, breeds of apple. Now there's like six. Fuji, you know, what, Macintosh, I guess the most popular, Granny Smith. You know,
Jonathan.
There's a couple of other, Honeycrisp. What's that one you said?
Jonathan.
Oh, I don't remember those, but there's like
Jonathan
another
Apple.
One, Galen Apples, the apples or whatever they're called. Anyway,
we have to bring,
like, yeah,
bring Johnny Appleseed back and let him walk across the land again.
Well, the point is that the food should be local, and these big agribusinesses. And part of the thing, I've had this, you know, show in mind for a long time, to go after the agricultural subsidies. And one of the biggest perpetrators is Archer Daniels Midland. Archer Daniels Midland gets a subsidy for ethanol. They shouldn't get a subsidy for ethanol. We shouldn't pay billions of dollars a year for farmers to grow corn to make fuel when we've got more oil than we know what to do with. Why would you do that unless you're paying off Archer Daniels Midland? You know, we pay farmers not to produce. Yeah, go ahead.
Any operation that grow commercial food, whether it's a corner lot in your city,
mm-hmm.
and they can be available for farm subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
USDA has a page, has a website that have all the farm subsidies on where they go into the farms in your area.
Can you send me that page?
And if you, pardon me?
Well, if you send me that page, I'll include that in a bill that all these should be deleted. All these farm subsidies will be gone.
No, you got to have farm subsidies because if farmers, just like any other business, if you have 2 or 3 years where you don't produce enough crops to pay for your overhead, you're going to say the heck with it and go out of business.
That's not what subsidies are for, though. Subsidies are for keeping the prices high. So in other words, you pay people not to produce. Subsidies were brought in during the Depression, but there's no need for a subsidy now. In fact, I think we'd be better off without them. If you take away the subsidies, subsidies usually go to the big companies, Archer Daniels Midland, Smithfield. In fact, you sent me the article on Smithfield, you know, the Chinese-owned pork company. So nobody should buy Smithfield. It's Chinese Communist Party owned meat.
We visited the University of Iowa one time. Someone was interested in finding out more about dairy farming for the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the discussion session, they was talking about the number of dairy farms that were just going out of business within a week. You know, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 would go out in a week there in that area because of the lack of desire for young people coming up in the family wanting to carry the business on and other reasons. So
yeah, they want to sit at a computer. They don't want to be out there farming. I understand that. But you've got to make it economic again. So it has to be economically viable for people to have small family farms. So I would, if you want to subsidize anything in agriculture, subsidize small family farms. Small independent businesses take all the subsidies away from the big companies so that they can, so the small farms can compete with the big farms on an equal basis.
Yeah, the small farms are able to receive any operation that sells commercial. I don't know if this rule comes under the commercial CCC or what, but they are eligible for a subsidy. It can be as much as $49 up to the big farms that have more expenses in the millions.
Well, wait a minute. Why is it, we've got a free market. Why should we have to subsidize it at all? Why can't we just maybe remove taxes or things like that or just let them compete? So the free market should determine the best size of the farm. And if small family farms are economically more viable than these big agribusinesses that are dependent on huge subsidies, then maybe we should eliminate the subsidies, eliminate the huge agribusinesses, and let the small farms feed us.
Well, actually, it keeps food prices down because it provides a lot of food rather than a minimal amount of food. If you got a minimal amount of food with a lot of demand, the prices don't go up.
Yeah, but here's the problem. When you have a lot of food, you get feedlots, you get chemical food, you get pesticides, you get herbicides, you get organic growth hormones, you get GMO. You know, all these things are designed to lower prices and create bigger economies of scale, but they sacrifice the quality of the food. So we just talked about the Amish, which is pure food. So we need to get back to pure food, and if it costs a little more, it costs a little more. I'd rather pay more for real food than pay for a premature death, you know, at a lower cost.
Well, no other country in the world have the yield that the American farmer have in certain crops and that allows to be able to feed more people.
Well, that's a good thing.
If you have food shortage, then you have a problem.
Right. Well, that's why we need more carbon dioxide and more, going back to our first story. Let me finish this article. And we have a, I think you're going to find it interesting. I've pulled up a WEBY interview for the next hour. It's our first men's conference. So in during our not our, but during Gay Pride Month, I'm looking for things that are a little challenging. Remember that post I made, you know, calling Gay Pride Month Pride Month is like calling Black History Month History Month? You sort of lost the whole characterization. What's the point? Anyway, I found that interesting. Let me get back to my article here. And this is Mercola News. This is from actually this morning. I'm talking about industry watchdog issues warning. So these folks here, according to the Organic Trade Association, the OTA, the regulation is the first significant movement on organic animal welfare in years. The Humane Society Legislative Fund has also hailed the proposed rule as a landmark federal regulation. So the Humane Society is not a humane society. they want the abolition of pets, and that, you know, they're not what they say they are. I have to look into them more to get the actual stuff, but they're not who you think. So anyway, we've got a quote here. Mark Castell, K-A-S-T-E-L, Executive Director of Organic Eye, an organic industry watchdog, vehemently disagrees, saying that rather than strengthening the organic label, the new regulations will undermine it further by permanently codifying practices that violate the spirit of organics and even the current letter of the law. You know how the latest $6 trillion budget act was called the Debt Reduction Act? You know, or Obamacare was called the Affordable Care Act, or the inflation generator was called the Inflation Reduction Act. So this is another one of those completely mislabeled things. So we have a new regulation. Now, we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about the folly of regulations, of how they're not done properly, how Congress doesn't have the oversight they should, how these rogue agencies are doing whatever they please. Here's another example. So you've got the Department of Agriculture, you know, taking money from the lobbyists to change and water down the definition of organic so people think they're getting pure food when they're really not. Yes, Marco. Marco's on listening to us in the Netherlands. What are the farm regulations you have? Do you have – is your organic really organic? You know, how strong are your farm laws there? Because I know the farmers are under siege because they use nitrogen fertilizer, which that really increases the yields we've talked about. Anyway, so he says, here's a quote, organic companies have been acquired by conventional producers, excuse me, that slowly but surely have eroded organic standards through willful violations and lobbying. There you go. It's the lobbyists again. He says organics was supposed to be the antidote to the get big or get out draconian agribusiness domination of our food supply. This is Castell again. He says instead, organic companies have been acquired by conventional producers that slowly but surely have eroded organic standards through willful, he says the same thing as the quote above, violations and lobbying. He says, as a result, 90% of, quote, organic eggs now come from gigantic, confined animal feeding operations. They're called CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, owned by the largest suppliers of conventional eggs. And most certified organic chicken comes from companies that raise birds in near total confinement and feed them imported grains that may or may not be truly organic, as organic grain fraud is now commonplace. So just to sum up, to put this in perspective for people, organic farms, small family farms, doing it right, following their procedures, good healthy produce, healthy chickens, healthy cows, healthy eggs. The large businesses come in, buy an organic farm, call their food organic, but they gradually move to the very same, you know, horrible practices that caused the organic farms to be more popular because the food was pure. Yet they're able to call it organic because of these new regulations. That's what's going on. This is terrible. Pianchi? Back to you. Or not.
A commercial chicken operation, chicken leg, the egg rolls down onto an area where it goes on a conveyor and it goes to another collection point. Then, you know, the process goes on. If you're going to feed large nations with a large population, you have to have those type of methods. Where you're going to have people walking around in a field picking up eggs out of nests.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry. If
that's
you're
what
gonna
I do.
Feed your population, if you're going to feed your populations in from an automatic process, that's the way it goes.
Well, but then say so. then don't call it organic. I don't mind the fact that, you know, large businesses are producing a lot of food. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is large companies producing food using standard techniques and calling it organic when it's not. That's what I have a problem with. So, and I also have a problem with the large businesses buying the small farms and changing the rules so that they're calling things organic that really aren't. Because the small farms have an advantage. They can pull the eggs out of nests, and they do have a smaller market. That's the whole point. But millions of small farms, you know, would do us a lot better than 10, you know, huge agribusinesses. So if the agribusinesses, if they just say what they're doing, don't call their food organic, you know, if they confine the animals and things like that, that should be readily available information to the public, and people can decide for themselves. What they want is to produce food the conventional factory way, but have people think it's a small organic farm way. So that's deceptive. That's false and deceptive. That's actually against the law. That's what the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, regulates.
Well, you should educate the people to know what it means. You know, in some countries, if you have an organic operation at one farm, that mm-hmm. farm cannot get organic designation for foods that's going to be imported into the United States unless that designation mm-hmm. applies to the whole country. All operation that's going on in the country, I think that's wrong. It should only apply to that one location rather than trying to do the whole country, because it's just impossible. So if you went to a foreign country overseas, say down in Jamaica, Africa, and you wanted to start an organic operation in a food and drug, if the agent would have to come in and do the inspection, well, that inspection should go for just that one location rather than having to apply to the whole nation. And that's the way it is now. I think that's wrong.
Well, I think so, too. I mean, obviously, you inspect, you know, the local place. And in fact, it'd be nice if people could check the certification from whatever inspections they get. And so a lot of times it's interesting. You know, Chance used to do this, and now CJ's doing it. And some of the other folks we've had on our wellness folks, Lindsay, Paige, and some of the other people, you know, they actually investigate the companies. You know, when they talk about organic, clean food, they actually have, you know, companies they've looked into. I do the same thing. You know, I've looked into and read websites of and, you know, and talked to people from different companies. You know, I drink Tropicana orange juice. People say, oh, it's full of sugar and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? It's not from concentrate, which means they haven't ground up the skin and put all the pesticides in it that the other people that make orange juice from concentrate do. I get my eggs locally. You know, when I can find grass-fed beef, I'll probably use that. You know, again, wild-caught fish. No farm fish, because it's like a feedlot. You know, so you have to take responsibility for yourself, and you can actually call up the companies. So the best thing that people can do, rather than wait for the government to fix itself, because they're not going to, because there are too many victims of lobbyists, is actually research the companies yourselves. Call them up. Look them up. Get friends' recommendations. Buy locally. Local produce is the best way you can do it. In fact, especially locally, you can probably visit the farm. You know, and in that way, people can ensure a much better food supply. So we don't have to buy from the agribusiness. But people are stuck on convenience and cost. It's like when they said, you know, we have to have illegals harvesting lettuce because Americans won't pay, you know, X dollars for a head of lettuce. They want it for like 50 cents. Well, if Americans
knew...
You can't
visit with a chicken for them.
Why not?
They don't allow it because of the biohazards. When you come up on a chicken farm, so in your car has to be washed. Tires have to be washed.
Really?
You got to go into, if you're going to go in, you got to put on a hazmat suit. You got to take your shoes off. You got to step into a cleaner before you can go into the house itself.
So you don't contaminate the chickens.
And chickens have to be grown in a house. You can have some small operations, but that meat will cost a whole lot more. Where uh-huh. chickens are allowed to go out into a field. You know, some houses can hold hundreds of thousands of birds. Broilers is what they call it. Uh-huh. And you can't let them out so the hawks will get them. Hawks and everything else will come down and take your chickens off.
Yeah, no fox in the hen houses, they say. Yeah, like I say, I don't mind that. I mean, I don't want them to be unnecessarily cruel to the animals, but just tell me. Just tell me, this is a a chicken factory operation. Okay, that's cool. People can make their own decisions. So the real solution here, the easy solution, is truth in advertising. And that's something that the Federal Trade Commission can enforce. Let me do one more paragraph on this. And then I'm going to do one more article on what they're not telling us about lab meat. Then we're going to take a break. Then I have a really interesting WBY interview, again, for Gay Pride Month. It's a bunch of straight guys around talking about men, you know, and we don't do enough of it. But I want to get these guys back on the show. WBY was really special because I had a table and I could actually get guys in, or actually people, you know, men and women in the studio talking. And there's something about a live panel discussion where we had like three or four microphones, you know, hanging in this, coming out of this big spiky thing in the middle of the table, like starfish arms. And it's different when you see people there. You get the visual, you get the facial reactions, as opposed to everything we do here, which is by phone, which is a little different. I kind of missed the panel discussions around the table. Anyway, let me get this one last part here, and then I'll get a different article. And this says, legalizing violations of the organic spirit. This is what I was talking about. It says, in a letter to the members, Castle, the guy we were talking about earlier, says, for most of the last decade and a half, stakeholders in the organic industry have alleged that the largest egg companies in the United States have been operating mammoth livestock factories, like you're talking about, with USDA illegally granting organic certifications. It is a problem. If you're not organic, just don't be labeled organic. Just say so people can make a choice. That'd be like putting something as GMO, say non-GMO, and it really is GMO. That's genetically modified organisms. You can't do that. Anyway, he says in 2022, an agency released a new draft rule, which they purport will bring these operations into compliance, assuring a level playing field for competitors and meet consumer expectations. And meet as an M-E-E-T. Meet consumer expectations, not meat, M-E-A-T. He says, other than family-scale farms producing certified organic eggs, the majority of production takes place on commercial operations, like Bianchi was talking about, commonly with 20 to 30,000 birds per building, with some of the largest conventional egg marketers in the country operating certified organic houses with as many as 200,000 chickens per building and over a million birds on individual, quote, farms. The industry's most vocal watchdog, Organic Eye, who we've been quoting from here, has vociferously, in other words, loudly, criticized the proposed regulations as a giveaway to corporate agribusiness interests, codifying the continuing violations of the spirit and letter of the law by failing to assure that organically managed animals have legitimate access to the outdoors and are able to exhibit their natural instinctive behaviors, both requirements of the current statute and regulations. So basically, big business is buying an organic label for stuff that's not organic. That's what it is, and that's wrong. That should be changed. Comment?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you this. I don't know. For people to buy something that's labeled organic, you're going to pay more. And people that's in marginal income and that can't afford that. And I don't know why come a large traditional operation would want to label their products organic and they're not produced like the backyard chicken is. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they do that. Because, well, if you buy a pound of grass-fed beef like some stores have it, you will pay considerably more than what you would for, you know, your regular traditional ground beef.
Yeah, corn-fed fat beef.
Even
I know that.
Even lean cuts is more.
Yeah, except in Australia, because all the beef there was
$7, $8 a pound.
Yeah, but this is the only country that does that. I mean, in Australia, all our beef was grass-fed. All our lamb was grass-fed. I suppose the goats were, too. I didn't eat goats.
Yeah, all beef is even... Right. All beef is fed on the field until they're about ready for slaughter. You know, it's when they used to do the cattle drives. Mm-hmm. They used to do the cattle drives to Kansas, and when they got there, they had to put them in the pen and feed them corn in order to fatten them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then they killed them. Yeah, cattle drives are interesting. Those are the last of the cowboy days. They only lasted about 20 years. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, we're still celebrating cowboy movies. All right, let me do a couple more paragraphs of let me do a little bit of this article, and then we'll take a break, and then I'll come back with my men's conference, which is a fascinating discussion. It's also pretty funny, too. So this is Mercola again, Dr. Mercola, What They Don't Want You to Know About Lab-Grown Meat. This is June 6th, so this is 2 days ago. He says, while the fake meat industry is being touted as an environmentally friendly and sustainable way to feed the world, the true intent is to recreate the kind of global control that Monsanto and others achieved through the patented GMO seed development. That's genetically modified organism, GMO. In the end, lab-created meats are worse for the environment than livestock and will undoubtedly deteriorate human health to boot, just like GMO grains have. This is why I don't have GMO grains. You know, so again, if things are properly labeled, we can make a choice. So what they want to do is produce things one way, label it another way, and have you buy stuff that's not what it says it is. Anyway, lab-grown meat is worse for the environment than cattle. See, that's the whole point, though. They say they want lab-grown meat because it's better for the environment. That's not the real reason. The real reason is they want to control the food supply. Take natural food out, put artificial food in, and control people genetically, and who knows what they're going to put in these things. Vaccine stuff to kill you? I mean, we don't know. Anyway, natural food is better. If it doesn't walk or grow, I don't want to eat it. Or fly. or swim in the oceans. Anyway. He says, as reported in the San Francisco Chronicle, researchers at UC Davis, which is a really good college for agriculture, by the way. I used to live not too far from there. UC Davis warned that there are major environmental downsides to lab-grown meat that aren't part of the conversation or the decision-making process. According to their, quote, cradle-to-grave life cycle analysis, the lab-grown meat industry produces up to 25 times more CO2 than traditional animal husbandry, which nullifies the core ideological foundation upon which the industry is built. See, I don't mind more CO2 being produced. That's not a problem for me. The problem for me is that they're lying. You know. Then he says, as noted by the authors, investors have poured billions. You wanted to make a comment there, Pianki?
No, I was going to say CO2 has become the scapegoat today.
Uh-huh.
When it's really nothing more than a fad. It's been used to insert certain objective opinions, which is false, really. And I think toward our everyday life today, it's an escape goal.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm curious, though, why they produce 25 times more CO2. So maybe it's the process. I don't mind CO2, obviously. I mean, you know, I'm in favor of more of it. But the question is, what is it about this process that produces so much more CO2? So maybe it's the process we should look at, not the fact that it's producing CO2. Anyway,
I don't know nothing about lab-grown, but it sounds crazy. It sounds like a Frankenstein.
Well, read the article. I'll be posting. Actually, this one's already in our vaccine project, and I think on my page. And it says...
Would you eat something like that?
No, never. I don't even eat GMO food.
No, I wouldn't either.
No.
And I think
unless
what's
you don't
the
know.
Thing they got in the name is putting that in the shelves without telling people where it comes from and exactly what it is. I think that's deplorable.
That's why GMO food is labeled. You know, that's why you go to any dairy products, any milk, cream, you know, things like that, and they'll say made with cows that do not have the RBHT growth hormone. They have to put that there because nobody buys stuff that does have the growth hormone, even though the FDA, the lobbyists have bought something that says that RBHT growth hormone has been shown safe and effective. Well, they say that about the COVID jab too. You know, so I don't trust it. I don't want something with the growth hormone. So you notice all the products on the shelves, say, especially, you know, if you shop in Publix or we also have Winn-Dixie around here. But our grocery stores, I haven't found a milk or cream or other product yet that doesn't say not made from cows that have not been given the growth hormone because nobody wants it. Nobody wants lab-grown meat. If you have a lab-grown meat section in your supermarket, which is what they should have, do you think anybody's going to buy it? Of course not. Well, you're going to pay more for regular beef. Well, at least it's beef. It's not, you know, bugs. Anyway, it says here that, see if I can find you my next quote here. As noted by the authors, investors have poured billions of dollars into animal cell-based meat, ACBM, everything has an acronym, right? Sector based on the theory that cultured meat is more environmentally friendly than beef. Cultured? In other words, you know, manufactured. He says, but that hype is primarily based on flawed analysis of carbon emissions. Oh, here we go. The primary sources of CO2 emissions are the purification processes, which require, well, I'm going to say are organic fuels. Oh, that's why. Those are burning organic fuels to make this stuff, right? Excuse me. It says the bacteria used to produce the, quote, meat. See, they shouldn't even be able to call it meat. They have to call it, you know, food products. See, the fact that it's labeled meat is a problem for me. They should call it food product. So we're going to call it food product from now on. So the bacteria used to produce the food product releases endotoxins, and these must be eliminated from the growth medium, or else the cells won't reproduce properly. As noted by the authors, animal cell culture is traditionally done with growth medium components, which have been refined to remove or reduce endotoxin. The use of these refinement methods contributes significantly to the economic and environmental costs associated with pharmaceutical products, since they are both energy and resource intensive. In other words, they're doing this even costs more, is less efficient, and produces a ton more CO2. So there's got to be other reasons for doing it. Anyways, it's based on this assessment.
You got companies that you got pharmaceutical companies that's trying to get over into another realm of the market of business of grains. They want to produce grains through a chemical process. That's totally ridiculous too. It's dangerous, I would think.
The more you mess with Mother Nature, the more you take products away from their natural environment, the worse the food gets and the more dangerous it gets because it's unnatural. These are unnatural products. These are outside of nature. It's like the whole gain of function, you know, bringing a coronavirus, you know, COVID-2, SARS-CoV-2 is an unnatural virus that was man-made. So the more people mess with this stuff, you know, in other words, don't eat margarine, eat butter. Eat butter. Butter's better for you. You know, fat is not a bad thing. Every cell in your body has sterols. In other words, cholesterol. So cholesterol, without cholesterol, you'll be dead. You'll collapse. People don't know that. Carbohydrate.
Do all sorts of methods of crossbreeding cows. Japan has this one cut called a Wanu or something of that nature. Hell, those steaks can cost as much as $265 for a steak dinner.
Well, they use special beef like Kobe beef, and they use the top beef produced.
Yeah, Kobe. Sorry.
Well, here's another one. This is a good point. We're going to take a break in a second here. But the grades of beef are prime, choice, and select. So which one's the best one?
Well, if you're hungry, you're going to eat one of them.
Okay, now wait a minute. No, think about that. Now, there's a reason that they chose those names. They don't have grade A, B, and C. They don't have grade 1, 2, and 3. They chose the names prime, choice, and select. So which one's the top grade of beef? These are purposely misleading terms.
Well, I would
say
prime will be the top grade, but I'm not a butcher.
See, I researched this one day. So what would be the second, choice or select?
Select would probably be on the bottom.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Choice is second. But if you tell people, well, you got one beef over here, this is prime beef, and this beef is choice over here. It's misleading. You don't know which one's better just by the name.
And it's ranked by the marbling, which is fat, in the cow's meat.
Yeah. Let me, Marco's got a comment here. And then I'm going to take a break. I'll play my stuff and then we'll have CJ at the top of there. We can continue this with CJ. I've already sent her the article. And so we can go for this. Marco says, in the Netherlands, organic farms must adhere to the strict requirements set by the European Union to be certified. These requirements include using only organic farming methods, such as crop rotation and green manure, that's poop, and abstaining from synthetic pesticides and fertilizers. Europe's actually better about food than we are in many cases. Europe doesn't allow things that we do allow, like aspartame and some other things. He's got a bunch of websites there, so I'm going to copy these websites and put them in there. And then he says, let's do that here, make a copy. I'll do this when I do my break. And then he says, I pass chicken farms every day, never seen it from outside. I think he means inside, but that's okay. Inside, yeah, exactly. Yeah, did you ever see the video of these guys that pass by a turkey farm and they do the gobble noise and all the turkeys gobble back? It's hysterically funny. Anyway, it's 8:08. I just have enough time to do this here. So 8:08, I'm going to take a little break and then come back. And when I come back, I'm going to play you what is a very interesting men's conversation we had. And it's four guys from the First Christian Church of Pensacola. And let me go play something. Pull up my ads here, and I'll be right back in just a few minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elba Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. And if you want to know how best to help us, then listen to this. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. And we are back here. I got Pianki in the line. I've got Marco Netherlands. No Warren. Warren hasn't shown up yet, so maybe he really is not going to bother us again. But since I've heard everything he wants to say and find it all very destructive and disingenuous and a bunch of other things, I don't care that he's not here. So that's okay. Now, let me set this up. I did an interview back in 2017 when I was – this is in would have been May. May 16th of 2017. So this is this wonderful time I had between March 1st, 2017 and Friday the 13th of July, 2018, when I was told that was my last show. That was an interesting time. But I think we accomplished amazing things. And I'm sure you can see why I was fired after listening to this article. But that's someday I'll talk about it. I can't go into great details yet. Anyway, I was fortunate enough to run by this church first. I think it's the first Christian church. We'll find out when we play the article, play the show here. Which exactly the name of the church? But literally, I was coming out of my dentist and I saw this sign. It said men's conference in this church, and I drove up to it, and said, "Hey guys, what you got going on?" "Well, we're doing this men's conference." And, "Okay, cool." I said, "I'm on the radio. You want to come and talk about it?" They're like, "Yeah, that sounds good." And so I think within like a few days, they were in the studio, and we had this big oak table, and we had this like star thing that had microphones on these extension devices, like those old lamps, you know. And so we had several microphones, and we had three guys come from the church, different parts of the church, to my studio at WEBY 1330 AM, world's greatest radio station as far as I'm concerned. It was called Northwest Florida's News and Talker. And so for a year and 4 months, I had my dream job. And I was in a studio. We had a producer. I had a good boss. You know, he gave me opportunities. I was able to do things that most, I would say, there wasn't a host in the country that was able to do what I was able to do at a regular radio station, which was to create an entirely new kind of radio called Action Radio with a citizen legislature. So because of that, I was able to get wonderful guests, and I was really building up what I thought was a fabulous community of people. We had local folks coming in. We had different people listening to the show. We had thousands of listeners. It was amazing what was going on. And then it was all taken away for basically doing what I was hired to do, which was Action Radio. And that, again, is a fascinating story of I'll leave it at that. Anyway, let me pull it up here. I'm looking for it right now. So this was the men's group from First Christian Church. It was their men's conference. It was the first of, I think, four conferences we did by the guys. So I'll play other ones as we go. Here it is. So again, when you hear references to the WEBY or a phone number other than 215-383-3832, that is from the recording from May 16th of 2017. Let me lower the volume a little bit because it's always too loud when it comes on my show. And here we go. At the end of this, we'll pretty much be time for CJ by the time this is over. And so we'll go right into her report as well. Back at the top of the hour.
You can tell we're going to have a very serious time here today, right? Yeah, baby. 8:06 in the morning here. Time for the Action Radio Hour with Greg Pangos and three gentlemen. I use the term loosely.
Gentlemen.
Yep.
From the first city church of Pensacola. So they're Facebooking it live, too. So you can go to your – what's the website title?
Just First City Church on Facebook.
Okay, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might look it up here. I can watch myself here on my computer screen, which awesome. Should be kind of fun. So here's what happened. So I'm coming home from the dentist, all right? And so I'm driving down the road, and I think it's Gadsden mm-hmm. Road where the church is. What's the address? We should give that
13th
note.
And it's 1301 East Gadsden.
Okay, that sounds mm-hmm. good. And so I'm driving home, and I see the sign First City Church. It's pretty. It's orange. I thought, well, that kind of attracts my attention. And then there's a sign underneath it that says Men's Conference. Okay, now you got my attention. You know, I've been like a men's rights guy for years and years and years. You know, interrupted by a marriage, which I'm not going to talk about. A strong believer that men need to have fellowship with men. We don't talk enough. We don't do a lot of stuff. And so I was really intrigued by this whole concept, and that's why you're sitting here right now. So this is Action Radio, and anybody out there is fair game. So if I call your business or a government office or things like that, you never know when you're going to end up on the air here, and that's how this all happens. So Andy Cruz is the minister. And so is it Reverend Andy, or what's your official title?
Andy.
That sounds good. We're going to Andy from now on. So
very official.
Okay, well, you seem kind of casual, which is good. So you're easy to talk to, right?
Yeah, I try to be.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the church first, then we'll get into the conference.
Okay, well, First City Church, it's a non-denominational church. Our whole vision there is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Church has been around about 13 years. There's four of us on staff. Pastor Rick Hazlip, he brings the word every Sunday. He does an amazing job.
Oh yeah. Where's he? How come he's not here today?
We don't have the microphone for him. I mean, we're having a boys club, and you just don't want your dad to come around. Yeah. Sometimes, you know.
He's your boss, right?
Yeah. Okay. He's the boss. You know, we're out here having fun behind his back.
Better to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Yeah. I've never understood that. What does that mean exactly? So you
be
act
bold.
First?
Yeah, be bold.
Oh, okay. Be bold. You know, okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, do what you want and just pay for the consequences later.
Yeah. I didn't know. I'm sorry.
Adog, well, you bring Adog in this, too. So, Adog, if you want to join the conversation here, because you normally don't in this hour, because I have guests, you know, somewhere out in the ether, but feel free. If you have questions, I want to bring you in, because I thought you'd get a kick out of this this gathering here today.
Sound I can good? Always tell these guys are fun.
Okay, yeah, we're having a great time. This is a very serious church, right?
So that's A-Dog, the world's best producer?
Exactly. You heard the quote. A-Dog, the world's greatest producer. Greatest producer.
Greatest producer.
Yeah, let's all say it together. 1, 2, 3. A-Dog, the world's greatest producer.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. You get a bunch of guys together. And this is the thing, too. You know, we don't have to take this seriously all the time. I think, you know, that's one of the problems now. Life is too serious. Work is too serious. Family is too serious. You know, your wife or girlfriend says, we have to talk, which are like the four most dangerous words. You know, you're already going, oh, yeah,
just,
there we
anytime
go. Anytime
I hear we need to talk, I just immediately think, what did I do? What did I do? My mind starts racing.
See, mine's just the opposite. I say, no, we don't. You need to talk.
I need to listen.
I need to, like, reload or you know, or hit the bicycle and go, you know, ride trails or things like that. So it's a whole different thing. But so... Anyone in the church? So your services are Sunday morning?
Yes, yeah. Sunday morning. We have two services, 9 and 11 o'clock.
Okay. And so non-denominational, how does that work?
That means that we just welcome everybody and anybody.
Okay.
You know, we don't have we're not like Catholics. We don't have specific things. We don't answer to the church.
Okay.
You know, we just welcome any Christians of all races, creeds, and, you know, just everyone's welcome.
So there's no national organization above you. This
no.
is an independent church.
Independent
then.
Local church.
I might go. This sounds like fun. My difficulty is I don't sit still very well, and which you can probably guess. But church services for me, unless it's really engaging, intriguing, a lot of times my mind wanders really fast. The same problem I have reading. I'm like ADHD to the maximum. So, you know,
we have a play area.
Okay, good. Hey, I'll probably do that too.
Yeah, I'm actually the children's minister. You can just come back and play with the kids.
Well, it's not that bad.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
No, I'm the same way. I definitely need to be engaged. And when I was thinking of a Sunday morning when you
right.
go and sitting, you know, it just relaxing and hearing, you know, music or hearing somebody's voice, it's like, that sounds like a recipe for a nap.
Yeah, exactly. And you want church to be fun.
But I don't sleep at First City Church. I really, like,
okay.
I have, no matter how little sleep I get, like, it's, I mean, we're, Carl and yeah, the team is there bringing the worship music,
okay.
and Rick's got a really – he always does really great research on his talks and his sermons, and so
okay.
it's getting to hear that, and you're like, man, I didn't think of it from that side of things.
Yeah.
And
well, that's
end,
what church is supposed to do, is to
yeah.
get you to think of things that you wouldn't normally think of. So why don't you introduce yourself, Brent, and then we'll get to Carl, and you can tell your stories.
I'm Brent Wadzita.
Okay.
I've been going to First City Church, actually, for about 3 years. Since I've been in town with my wife, and we moved down here from Virginia Beach,
okay.
Virginia, about 3 years ago. So.
All right. What brought you here?
Actually running a business.
Okay.
So being able to help people with their finances and just walking through, you know, how to pay off debt and how to invest.
What's the business name? You can give it on the air.
It's Capital Choice Financial.
Yeah, which is?
Which is a, we're a financial services company. And
okay.
We work actually with Dave Ramsey locally in the area.
Oh, there you go.
So it's a lot of fun. We get to meet with a lot of families and
okay.
just try to teach you the things that you didn't learn in high school about money.
Yeah. What's your affiliation with the church? What's your position there?
My position with the church, I'm a right there at a regular tender with things.
Okay.
I help work with the finance team.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of using my gifts where God's planted me. So
perfect. Carl?
Yeah, I'm Carl Burt with a Y.
Okay.
And I came to Pensacola because of the Air Force. I'm actually
okay.
active duty in the Air Force
oh,
right
cool.
now. And
what's your job there?
I am one of the individuals that helped corral all of the and herd all the cats there on Corey Station with the Air Force students.
The human
cats? The human cats.
Okay.
It's really cool.
So you're a coordinator.
You can call me that. I
okay.
just like to say I make people happy.
Okay.
So that's pretty much what I do.
Well, that sounds good.
So I'm...
And with the church?
I'm there at the church. I've been there for almost 5 years now.
Okay.
And I'm their worship leader there.
Okay.
We have a great worship team. We have a great staff. Everything's great. I just say great constantly whenever I'm talking about First City Church.
Great.
So, yes, it's awesome.
Great. That was great.
That was great. Great church. This is a great day.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have a great day, eh? We'll be
oh,
Canadians
yeah.
now, so we're going to be
great.
Great day.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
can be Bob and Doug McKenzie, hey? And I'm going to check your great Facebook page when we take the break here in a minute, and we'll see how great you really are.
Great, great.
Before you, let's get your story, Andy. How'd you get involved in church? And
how much time you have?
Oh, we have an hour, right? Okay, we got the rest of the hour. We got to take a break, so I'll give you like 2 minutes.
All right.
Well,
I'm originally from Pennsylvania. The military brought me down here.
Pennsylvania to Pensacola.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
We got that theme going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I got arrested for my second DUI over in Fort Walton Beach. Mm. I was in the Air Force over there.
Right.
I had no God in my life or anything. And
okay.
I was going to move back to Pennsylvania and buy a bar. because they were going to turn the bar I grew up in into a church, and that appalled me.
Wow. Okay.
And so then I went to rehab.
Different, interesting. Where you had a conversion then.
Yeah, truly. You know, every time I go in the Fort Walton Beach and I see the Publix there, I think that's where my life changed. That's where I was arrested for my second DUI, which sent me to rehab,
okay,
which sent me into a relationship with God. First City Church was
the... How'd that happen? How'd that conversion happen?
Well, in rehab, they start talking about... a higher power, God, things like that. So it set me searching for something.
Okay.
And when I was searching for something, I found First City Church back in 2003. So I walked in the door as a non-believer, and now I'm on staff.
Wow. So and you weren't a minister, you know, at any point. So you then did you go to school for being a minister?
No, I graduated UWF with a degree in philosophy and religion.
Okay.
And just was.
That's a great background, actually.
Yeah. And so it's been really good. I've been learning as I've been on staff as well.
Interesting. Okay. Well, it's 8:14. We're going to take a little break now. We're going to come back. We'll start talking about the men's conference, the various programs, the schedule, things like that. Get on the line now.
Yeah.
Call us at 623-1330 if you want to talk to the guys. So we have Andy, Carl, and Brent here from First City Church. And I'm going to see if I can find the Facebook page, and we can watch ourselves for a minute and see what's going on here. So this is Greg Penglis with the Action Radio Hour, 8:15 on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Thank you, Doug. 8:18, we've got First City Church here. We got the guys. We got Carl, Andy, and Brent. And I want to read something from your website, and we'll get talking about the men's conference here. You say, a war is waging, a daily battle for our hearts, our minds, and our souls. You are stuck behind enemy lines. Before you swore allegiance to Jesus, the enemy had nothing against you. Now a servant of the King, you are the primary target of an enemy bent on the destruction of you and your family. Andy?
Yeah, that's off of our Facebook page for the men's conference, and that statement is really just summing up, you know, what our men's conference is going to be about. You know, there is a war waging against men right now,
okay,
against men, against masculinity. You know, the enemy, what he would love to do is to just push men down, shove men down, so that we're not men, we're not the leaders that our families, that our community, that our churches need us to be. And so, we're just taking that line, and we just want to, at this conference, just empower men to be men.
Okay. I mean, I feel that all the time. And, you know, feminism, the good part about it is raising women up. The bad part is trying to put men down in the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this whole, like, on campuses, the rape culture they talk about, you know. So if you're a guy, you're almost responsible for all the evils of the world, no matter what. It's automatically, like, put upon you. You're assumed to be guilty, whereas a woman might be assumed to be innocent in the same situation. I'm thinking of, like, teachers, you know, accused of molesting their younger students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see a difference in treatment in jail sentences and things like that. Guys, you know, divorces, I think it's like women file 70% of the divorce. This is not a women bashing hour, but it's a question of you know, you hear that guys are always afraid of commitment, yet we're not the ones filing for divorce. Okay, so I mean, there's all these things going on, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about various issues and things. Let's hear about Andy. Do you have a program you're running at the conference, particularly?
Yeah, I'll be speaking about the whole theme of the conference is No Man Left Behind.
Okay,
and I'll be speaking about leaving no man left behind.
What does that mean exactly?
That means that, you know, as Christian men, as just men in general, there are men looking to those who've been around a while and saying, hey, I need guidance. I need leadership.
Okay.
You know, and it's taking a look behind me and saying, who can I pull along up beside me? Who can I build up to join me?
Yeah.
Who needs help in their walk with Christ? Who needs help with their wives, with their families, with their girlfriends, and just pulling them along and giving them the help that they need, rather than, you know, it's partnering together and not just doing life alone.
Yeah, I think guys do that. Our tendency is to be pioneers, is to be lone wolf. You know, we want to be out there, you know, doing what we can. We feel a sense of accomplishment when we can do something for ourselves. And this is why, you know, I wrote an article on how technology feminizes men. And what was interesting, the theory that, you know, if we don't ask directions, it's because we're stupid. Okay, this is the common line. You'll see it in commercials and you see things like that. No, the reason we don't ask directions is we like the challenge of trying to find our way back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if you look at it that way, it's a totally different perspective on what men are and what it means to be men. So I like being the person. I drive a stick shift car because it's more interesting than driving an automatic. Okay,
yeah.
I will take a map and a compass rather than a GPS because it's more challenge. And so what's looked upon by men, too, you know, the whole metrosexual, you know, differing kind of, I guess, you know, gender confused group out there. You know, there's some, they feel like there's a problem being men, so the millennials particularly. Do you have a thing for young men to sort of give them role models and some guidance? Do we have any program like that in this conference?
We do. This conference is okay. really based on establishing that mentorship and okay. mentee program so that we can have those that, you know, both where the mentor and the mentee are getting something out of it.
Okay.
They're ultimately learning from each other. They're building each other up, and it gives that outlet for the two men to come together,
okay.
Or even a few of the groups that want to come together and just share with each other, not just life experiences but that have been in the past, but life experiences that are going on now.
Yeah.
And for those younger ones, like the millennials you spoke about, or the 20 to 30-year-olds,
yeah.
you know, it's very much needed.
Because okay. they're not getting a good message in school.
Oh, yeah.
And unless they have you know, a strong father, you know, you're not going to get necessarily a good role model. So let's talk about that. Single moms raising men, or trying to.
Mm.
My contention is, you know, as much as they try to do a wonderful job, there's something that men have to get from other older mentor men. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at societies that have gone back to, you know, some of our most ancient cultures. They had some kind of a male hierarchy. I had Boy Scouts. I had male mm-hmm. teachers in Australia. I've had, you know, I used to have, you know, a friend of mine's fathers that I would talk to, just to talk to other men, just to learn and get examples. And so I think that's missing in our culture big time right now. We don't have the same rituals. We don't have the same things because we're sort of trying to breed masculinity out, and it's not a bad thing. Violence is a bad thing, but that's not masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk about that at all?
Oh,
anger issues, things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's especially with the, like looking at the analogy of war.
Okay.
You know, we're at the men's conference, we're tied in the spiritual war
okay.
that happens on all men's hearts. And really what we're looking at is, you know, beyond what, you know, the messages of the world, however you label them, whatever they might be,
okay.
it's really the agenda of the enemy. And so,
who's the enemy?
The enemy is Satan.
Okay.
Absolutely, you know, Satan looking to destroy, take the brokenness that he has in his mind
okay.
of, you know, what should be wrong,
okay.
How to separate us from God. Since, you know, the very beginning, that separation
okay.
was occurring through his inciting. And so from the enemy's agenda, if we know what that is and understand it, then we can watch out for it.
Okay.
And we can strategize against it.
Where do you see that in society or men's lives where the enemy is really doing the worst damage?
Well, it's what you mentioned. It's about the demasculinity
okay.
of men. You know, we look at it in throughout history, in biblical history, where we can see where the male was attacked whenever there was an idea of a leader coming up.
Right.
Whether that was with Moses in his time and Jesus in his time, you know, the leaders of that time were led through enemy influence or the adversary's influence, through Satan's influence, to
yeah.
cause genocide of boys, you know, and
yeah.
in order for a man who's coming up to not happen.
Take the firstborn
yeah.
men, because they're the generally the natural leaders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we as men okay. totally, you know, need to understand that there is a great war against us to
okay.
not be men, but we serve a God who can be victorious over it.
Okay.
Yeah, and to piggyback on that, when you're talking about single mothers, I was thinking back to myself growing up, and I think a lot of this men's conference, a lot of what I want to see out of it, just stems from what I didn't have growing
okay.
up, and what I need, or what I, you know, I feel like men need. You know, growing up, my mom pretty much was a single mom.
Right.
We had
my did
dad
the best
was,
she could.
She did the best she could.
Yep.
My dad was in and out of the picture. He was a very aggressive, abusive man, and
yeah.
so out of that stemmed for me. I'm intimidated by men.
Okay.
And so when I first started coming to the church and looking around, I needed positive older men influence speaking into my life to build me up, to give
mm-hmm.
me what I didn't receive growing up.
Right.
And it wasn't until in my late 20s, early, you know, mid to late 20s, where I started getting that male guidance, and it was in the church.
Yeah.
And it forever changed my life. You know, and then there's statistics. I'm not sure the exact statistics. One of you may know,
okay.
but there's.
We didn't
there's
bring them with you. Oh, come on, we got
no.
space on the desk here. Next time you come in, we'll
next
get all
time
that.
I'll bring my iMac and my iPad.
You can do
iPad.
That. Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
The statistic is something that with families that are going
okay.
to church, if you get the husband, if you get the father, the rest of the family will follow.
Okay.
Whereas if you get the mother, the husband probably won't follow.
Interesting.
And so it's all about, I forget, I think it's like
80%. 85%, I think.
Really? If the man goes?
If the man goes, you're 85% more likely to get the whole family to come.
Wow. That's huge. Do you notice that in your own church?
We do, yeah. Even times when the children come,
okay.
And then if we can get a hold of, like, the dad,
yeah,
he finds that, oh, this isn't like, you know, you're beating me over the head with the Bible.
Yeah.
The motto of our church since I've been there has been unconditional love,
okay,
and unadulterated word. But when it comes to the unconditional love part, sometimes, you know, the scriptural doctrine takes over instead of allowing that love of Christ to show. So First City is very good at allowing people to feel,
okay,
unconditional love. So that's what gets them.
I think I want to go. I mean, there's so many churches in this area. It's interesting, and I've had some great offers from some churches. I'm a different person, and so I have to find what works for me, and this, in an independent church like this might be interesting.
Well, we'd love to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Do you think the gang problem, where young men are brought into gangs, because there was an English philosopher, I think Chichester, who said, if you don't believe in something, you'll believe in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to have a belief in something. And if that something is God, then that's going to put you on a great path. But you're going to have to believe, you're going to believe in something somewhere along the way. And so if you don't have a father structure, if you don't have a family structure, if you don't have a church structure, you might have a gang to replace that. Do you see that? Are you doing work with this at all? Or
That is what we would call an illegitimate feel for a legitimate need.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a need there for men to be a part of a men's group and get with other men. But as you said,
yeah,
they're filling that need with the game.
And that speaks to something, too, as far as, you know, the innate desire of being in community, being in relationship with other guys who
right.
are, you know, going through that same kind of coming-of-age
yeah.
Seasons. And being able to know that, okay, there's a group that cares for me that's going to watch my back. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, that's lost art in today's culture, especially the rituals aren't there because we, you know, aren't going back and understanding that, hey, we're needing to be interdependent in order to increase our impact on what we can do.
Yeah.
So and I think, you know, that's something that men's conference will talk about, how we're wired, you know, how God wires us as men.
Oh yeah. And that's a huge topic. And, you know, I think it's like the couple places where men can just be, you know, themselves, sports. And military, you know, probably two good examples. But I mean, there aren't a lot of, and if you're not in those, I was in music, you know, and it was a mixed group, but it, you know, it was fun to be to belong to something. Mm-hmm. But it's nice.
Boy
to,
Scouts, like
yeah, I did
about.
Boy Scouts.
I was an Eagle Scout. So.
Was that?
I'm an Eagle Scout.
So Eagle Scout. Oh, congratulations.
My dad still volunteers, even though my brother and I are groaning out. And
oh wow,
y'all have like a secret handshake or nose thing y'all do?
I don't think for Eagle Scout. No. See, I was in Australia when I was a scout.
Mm.
So we didn't have an Eagle Scout down there, but I still ended up getting all the badges just because I like accomplishing things. Mm. And that's something I think is missing too. Men like to accomplish things.
Yeah.
We like to, you know, and so when you remove the manufacturing jobs, you know, we don't do service jobs as well. You know, you take a stack of papers and you put them from one side of the desk to the other. We're not really accomplishing something. Whereas, you know, I wrote a book. And so I whenever I see a copy of that book, it's like, I wrote that, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. I was a flight instructor, loved it,
oh, cool,
getting back into it. But I had that book, and I can say, I did that, you know, raised a daughter. I can say, I did that. You know, I don't build things because I'm terrible at it, but I mean, the guys that are in construction, you know, every time you drive by a building, you say, I built that,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I did the carpentry, or I did the plumbing, or I did the electrical. We need to build and to create. If you look at the dreamers of the world, it's usually men.
Yeah.
You know, almost, you know, the crazy people, the crazy ideas. Look at the crazy ideas in history, the airplane.
Yeah.
What a dumb idea that was.
That would never succeed.
Yeah. sailing, you know, you can't sail too far away because you'll fall off the edge of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the flat earthers. You can't go sailing around the world.
What about landing on the moon?
Oh, dumb idea. Stupid. Yeah, that's not practical.
Uh-uh.
You know, that's crazy. And I think we're losing our dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're losing our vision. We're losing what makes us, you know, men, because we're coming into this where we have to be practical and we have to be logical. I say nonsense. Dream. And that's how we got computers.
Yeah.
You know, a couple guys tinkering in a garage in San Jose, you know, Jobs and Wozniak, you know, came up with this amazing invention. We need to take a little break now, and we're going to get back. I want to talk about the exact schedule of events, Friday through Saturday, and it looks like we got our first call coming in as well.
Cool.
So, Adog, you can throw us into a break. We'll get that. And then 8:31, Greg Penglis here at the Action Radio Hour, 1330 WEBY.
All I need is 116 to brag on my king. Romans 116. We brag about him, baby, 'cause he runs this thing. Can I do it?
Yeah.
Do it.
Can I do it?
Do it.
Here we go again.
One to the ones that go in, is it one for the ones that only him? If one to get one good notice, damn.
Here we go again.
For this project in front of me, got my two eyes. After that W, like Nintendo.
In case you were wondering.
Love it.
Great music, Ed. I'll keep it up.
Oh, man. 116 is the bomb.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. All right. Yeah. So it's 8:35 in the morning. We got three guys here from the men's conference at First City Church, and that's going to be Friday and Saturday. A couple things I want to do. First, we were talking accomplishments, so let's talk about our accomplishments, okay? Me, I'm proud of the fact that I moved out here, took a job knowing nobody. I hadn't even met Mike the boss. I mean, we did this all by phone and email 4 months after open heart surgery.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So just packed up, crossed the whole country, took a total risk, and it's worked out perfectly.
Awesome.
So don't be afraid to take a risk. Written a book, raised a daughter, moved to the Bay Area, San Francisco, totally on my own, started over there. So starting over is not a problem for me. I don't want to do it again right away. You know, but I'm just saying, risk-taking is not a problem. That's what I'm proud of. How about Andy? What are you proud of?
Right now, I'm most proud of my family.
Okay.
Yeah, I married a wife who's way out of my league. And so, okay. I mean, she took a step down. I took 10 steps up.
Yeah.
And we have two beautiful we have two beautiful children. So yeah. When I come home, I just think of my life today, and I think, you know, these are gifts that I've been given.
Right.
But earlier when you're talking about, you know, we want to accomplish something, we see something, you know, on the side, I do painting, paint houses.
Yeah.
I painted through college. It's hard to get my degree. Yeah, I mean, totally.
I like this. Man work.
Every time I drive by a house that I painted, I tell my wife I painted that. She's tired of hearing it, but I'm proud of it.
Well, that's, you know,
tough. Like, I did
that.
Don't
get over it.
You know, or I hung billboards for Lamar for about 9 months.
Okay.
And I'll go by, you know, I used to do that. I hung one of those billboards, or I worked on that board.
Yeah.
But so it's just, you know.
It's accomplishment. It's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like to do stuff like that. Carl, what you got?
Yeah, same with Andy. I'm so proud of my family and that accomplishment itself. You know, been married for coming up on 19 years with my wife. I've been in the military for 19 years.
So you got started both at the same time, huh?
Yeah, well, I met her in basic training.
Okay.
So she hooked me right at the beginning.
Okay.
You know, I was running,
right.
You know, but she grabbed me and she put that voodoo trick on me. And
seems to have worked out well, though.
Yeah, I'm still brainwashed. It works, though. Every morning I get reconditioned I can still, you know.
We can talk about that at the conference.
No, but my children, you know, I got three great kids. One that is adopted. He's actually my brother-in-law. Love them tremendously, and my two kids that go to Pace High. But other than that, man, I'm just my biggest accomplishment. All those are symptoms of my greatest accomplishment, which for me is just giving my whole life to Jesus Christ.
Okay,
that's my biggest thing. So,
there you go.
Yeah,
Brett.
Yeah, no, Carl hit the nail on the head. It's like, you know,
he didn't say that well.
Thinking about all the accomplishments we do have are done by the grace of Jesus Christ in our life.
There you go.
But, you know, that's something where as we celebrate those accomplishments, we also celebrate who God is in our lives.
Okay.
So today is it marks my daughter's 7 weeks old right now.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, thank
that's
you. I didn't really sleep much last night. Well, no, actually, I'm going
to
step back and say I slept well last night
right.
because my wife sacrificially stayed up holding that, you know, holding the pacifier in and making sure that Eliana was able to sleep and just
so this is a
rest.
Great point. So you can celebrate as men, celebrate women. And celebrate wives and celebrate mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not trying to separate here.
Oh, definitely.
But you know, so if women want to call in too, I'd be curious to know what women think of the men's conference. Maybe they know a guy that you know has some things he wants to talk about, and maybe not want to talk about it himself. And a woman, you know, might have that perception and direct the guy, you know, where he might not listen to other guys.
That's great.
You know, so that's something interesting to think about too. You want to talk about that, or you want to get to our schedule for the conference?
Yeah, we can get to the schedule.
Okay, let's do that. What do we
got? For the men's conference on Friday night,
this Friday the 19th.
Yes.
Can we get someone give like a monster truck voice, like Friday?
Friday night, right now. May 19th and 20th.
Friday. And that was the men's conference at First Church, Pensacola.
Oh, yeah.
6 p.m.
How's that?
Be there, brother.
Okay,
great introduction.
Hulkamaniac in here, too.
Monster brother.
Yeah. Still trying to figure out the microphone.
Well, you'll get there. You're doing
four fingers.
So, go ahead.
So Friday night, we have two speakers.
Okay.
I'm going to be speaking about Leave No Man Behind, and we have a man named Teddy. Teddy's a fantastic guy. His life was changed 3 years ago at our first men's conference, and so now he's given back.
Good.
And he's going to be speaking about intentional living.
That's
living with purpose.
Okay.
You know, what am I doing with my life, and why am I doing it? And so just making choices in your life to or with they're intentional.
Okay.
And afterwards, we're going to have an after party.
Okay.
The after party, I think, is going to be probably the funnest thing we're going to do. We're going to have a cornhole tournament.
What's that?
We're going to a cornhole. It's a game with bean bags.
Okay.
And so you try to get bean bags into a hole on a board. And we're going to have a tournament with that. We're going to pair men up, you know, because men, you know, we're better together, but we don't want to talk very so often. And so we're just going to pair them up and play a game.
Okay.
Winner's going to get trophies. And at this thing, we're going to have tons of barbecue.
Meat.
We're going to have brisket.
Bacon.
Bacon. Yeah, bacon. Bacon's the theme.
I heard there's going to be bacon.
Bacon.
Man food.
A little bacon.
Man. Bacon. Yeah.
We talk about men working. Yeah. Men food.
No vegetables or broccoli.
No arugula?
No arugula.
Okay.
No arugula.
We're not gluten-free here, right?
No.
Okay, so we're definitely carnivores? This is man food.
This is man food.
Okay, good. So what time does this all start?
This starts Friday night at 6 o'clock.
Okay, goes till when?
The after party will probably wrap up around 10. The after party will start at 8:30.
Okay, got music?
We'll have music, yeah. Carl, he's our worship leader.
There you go.
And the worship band will be bringing it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We got a call here, so we'll take Charles, and then we'll get to Saturday's schedule.
Cool.
Charles, you're on the air. Hello, Charles. Going once. Going twice. Charles, you're not on the air. Okay, so back to Saturday.
All right, so Saturday.
That was easy.
I wonder, yeah.
Saturday morning, we'll be starting off with breakfast at 7 o'clock, and we're going to be having meat burritos.
Okay.
And Carl's going to be speaking that morning. And his tagline is, it's about to get real.
Okay.
Real. And we don't know exactly what he's going to be talking about. He won't tell us.
I won't tell him.
It's not a
like
secret.
It. Okay,
it's all,
good.
It's all about being real. Real.
Yeah.
And then after breakfast, we're going to have a few more talks about spiritual warfare, leadership.
What is spiritual warfare? Go into that. I'm kind of curious. I don't usually hear those words put together.
Yeah, spiritual warfare is something that, you know, in the Bible we talk, you know, we hear God's words telling us that the battle that we are fighting is not one of flesh and blood
okay.
and bone. It's actual one of a spiritual aspect of principalities higher than what we can see. So basically, when we as men are fighting against the physical person in front of us, whether it be our children, our wives, our friends, even ourselves,
okay.
it's not so much us that we're fighting the flesh and blood. We're not fighting against I'm not fighting against you, Greg, if I have a disagreement
right.
and it's something that's tearing us apart. Mm-hmm. We're fighting against the forces behind it that are okay. causing us to not unify together.
Right.
As men, this conference is bringing us together to say, listen, man, we have different ideas of everything. We have different influences around us. And sometimes what Satan does as the adversary, it causes us to have confusion brought about in our time of bringing us together. So you know what? Let's point at him at this is what the issue is. Get it to where it's squashed so that we can come together
yeah.
and allow God, who is the one that gives us all of every being to be mightier than he who is of the world, then we can conquer that together. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and this is really like a tactical training session as well.
Go into that.
Mm-hmm. See it. So when you're thinking of what your strategy is, you always have to consider the strategy of the enemy.
Okay.
And so in the sense of, well, if there's forces at work that are against what I'm trying to do to accomplish things or trying to do to create or build things,
okay.
You know, for my family, for, you know, a greater purpose, something bigger than myself, then I have to recognize the strategy of the enemy. And that's to confuse. It is to, you know, scatter and
How are men being confused these days? What's sort of some of the obstacles?
There's all sorts of messages out there about okay. What it means to be a man.
Right. If you're
going off the relative ideas and, you know, hey, this idea over here says you don't need to you know, have any sort of sense of purpose.
Right.
Or over here, you know, you don't need to have any sense of difference between men and women. You can just be the same, you know, human.
We're not the same.
Right.
You know, we're yin and yang. We are two parts of a whole, and it doesn't work unless we're fulfilling our part. One thing that galls me, and it probably does you too, I don't know if you talk about this at the conference, I am sick and tired of men being portrayed as idiots on commercials, mm-hmm. on TV shows, on all kinds of places. You look, I was watching a battery ad. The woman has the cell phone calling for help for the car battery. You look at this thing, I remember there was a jungle ad a while back. You had Tarzan and Jane, okay, and Tarzan doesn't know where the waterfall is,
mm-hmm.
but Jane's the one talking to the chimpanzee expecting it to speak English, and nobody comments on that, okay? So this whole portrayal, we are portrayed as idiots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you have a section on that?
If
you don't have one, I'll do that one.
You can come and speak on that.
Yeah. You know, Greg is going to be at the Men's
by Speech here.
Yeah. Can I give a quick shout-out? I see my wife joined the Facebook
sure,
live.
Sure, go ahead.
Feed,
oh,
so
man.
I just want to say, hey, baby, I love you. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah. Oh, he gets points for that one.
Yeah.
Does she treat you like an idiot?
No, she doesn't.
There you go.
Well, if Andy's making shout-outs, I just want to say my wife is listening right now with my parents and my my little daughter, Eliana.
Yeah.
Love you, baby.
But people can listen online, too, 1330WEBY.com. We actually got a person listening in Taiwan when I had a student co-anchor in here because I do that for high school kids. So they have the opportunity to spend 1 hour with me. They do a news story. They do a sports story, a weather briefing, and an editorial. We've only had one student so far, but his grandfather was listening online in Taiwan.
That's amazing.
Which was really – that's the power of radio.
Yeah.
So that's why I like to do this kind of stuff here. Yeah, go ahead. We were talking.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we were just talking about just the whole thing with the spiritual warfare and everything and the idiot part, you know, like you said.
Yeah, I'm sick of being true. You know, everywhere you look. I mean, how are guys supposed to get decent role models? You used to have, you know, the John Wayne. You know, you had the strong figure. You had the military hero, Sergeant York. Mm-hmm. You had all kinds of different things, you know, guys being portrayed, the inventors, you know, the crazy delusional ones, you know, and then that's okay, too, because without them, we don't get stuff. Mm-hmm. But you don't see that as much anymore. It's much more social. Groupthink, you know, we're all divided into groups, and that's a whole other topic, you know, we can get on as well.
Oh, yeah. Can I touch on that real quick?
Sure, of course you can.
I wrote down before I came in a verse from 1 Corinthians 16:13-14. It says, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. And a part is, you know, being portrayed like idiots, because that's it. I'm gonna not say that. But if we as men, as Christian men, live the lives that God calls us to live, I think that paradigm would change.
Yeah.
You know, if we're living the lives that Jesus called us to live, if we look to the Bible for our examples, if we look for our role models, if we look to Christ, I think that whole paradigm of men being idiots will change.
I hope so. Let's take our last break, and then we'll find out what it means to be called. What is the life that we are called for as men, according to the Bible, Jesus, God, and anybody we can... We can figure, you know, what's going on, things you've discovered on your own pathway.
Well, yeah.
It'll be interesting to talk about. 8:46, we'll be right back with the guys from First City Church of Pensacola talking about the men's conference, 1330 WEBY.
Church mother in a
church hat.
Clap when a sugar gave her color purple coming back. Clap when that whole week beat you up and stretch your butt. You hear that organ playing and remind you of your blessings. And on another note, she just had another note.
Facebook Live, by the way, if you want to check in with the First City Church website, so feel free.
Yeah.
First City Church Facebook page. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. We just have a few minutes left, so you know, I still want to invite any man out there that wants to talk to find out more about this to call in 623-1330. Any woman that wants, you know, more knowledge about this, you know, we're not limiting to anybody here. But if you know someone that might be interested in this conference, please let them know. So let's get some contact information, then we'll go into Saturday's schedule and see where we go from there.
All right. So if you're interested, if you have questions, you can email me at the church. It's A Cruz. That's A-C-R-U-S-E at firstcitychurch.org. And I spell that out because people either put a Z on it or they mistake me with Tom because I'm better looking.
There you go.
So it's A-C-R-U-S-E at firstcitychurch.org. Or you can call our church office at 850-433-0210. You can check us out on Facebook, or the website is www.firstcitychurch.org.
Yeah, firstcitychurch.org is the easiest way to go because you have all the other contact information there, too.
Oh, yeah.
So let's. What's Saturday bringing us? From when to when, times, all that kind of good stuff.
Saturday we kick off 7 a.m. With a breakfast. Carl's going to be bringing it, and then later on that day we have
Waffle House, right?
Waffle House. Oh yeah,
these guys are all at Waffle House before they came here today.
We're talking about that. There was a Waffle House.
Okay.
And then we got Mike Brent's going to be speaking on leadership, and then Pastor Rick is going to be bringing it at the end of the day, and we'll have lunch. But after each one of these talks, we're going to break men up into small groups, so that they can one get together and just meet other men, and two they can dive deeper into the subject together if they so choose.
Okay, why is it so important for men to talk to men?
Well, because men can speak into other men's lives.
Okay.
Like, for me, for the past 10 years, I've been meeting every Thursday morning at Waffle House with a gentleman from my church who he's led me and he's guided me, and I've needed that guidance.
Okay.
And so men need to be in relationship with each other. They need to be talking to each other. And just men, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah, I can see it right here, just the four of us. Mm-hmm. You know, we've never met. We're having a great time talking as guys, and I'm loving it. So
I think another thing, too, is the world doesn't have a lot of forum or places for men to speak into.
Okay.
There's a lot of noise that's out there.
Right.
So this is kind of a place where you can, you know, come speak your mind, get to share ideas, and
okay.
also process. You know, it's like, oh, I've been hearing this and this and this, and which one is true? Which one is, you know,
yeah.
the one that's actually anchored in the Word of God?
Yeah.
And that's where we get to talk through that together and be able to, you know, work out our faith, you know, through fear and trembling, and also of knowing that, hey, there's things that we don't understand, but we walk through and understand by being with each other.
Okay. So what does God call us to do as men?
As men, I was just thinking about something very similar to that as you were asking about, you know, why men need to talk to men.
Okay.
I use my dad as an example. My dad has been married to my mom for almost 50 years, and
wow.
I have a great example in him of what God calls us to be as men.
Okay.
Ultimately, in the example that he's given to me and my brothers and my sister, is that God has called him to be an absolute, total submissive servant to Jesus Christ.
Okay.
And when you do that, it is amazing how everything literally falls into line. When you give up all of who you are to all of who he is,
okay.
Jesus is, the power that you get, the authority that you get, the confirmation that you get in life, it's humbling and it's impressive. It's amazing. And you got to, you know, find that balance to where you say, it's not me.
Okay.
God calls us to do. Just give up who we are
yeah.
so that he can have full control.
Yeah.
Amen.
And that's kind of what I've tried to do here. I'm just sort of letting this process happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so whereas I would try and like force, you know, the agenda on myself, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then accomplishment comes in. The bad side of accomplishment is the requirement to accomplish. I have to have this much money by a certain age. I have to have this
mm-hmm.
kind of job. I have to have all these kind of things. And none of that makes any sense. You know, here I am, you know, late 50s starting something completely new. And it's like, I just said, I'm just going to go with it. You know, God, go ahead. Just open the door or doorway
mm-hmm.
up, you know,
mm-hmm.
open the road up. I'm just going to start driving,
mm-hmm.
you know, and sight unseen to a place I've never been
mm-hmm.
to do something in radio that's never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should tell you, but my goal with the program here is to create action radio. And so you might be interested in this, depending on what kind of issues, where the audience is going to become a citizen legislature. We're going to start filing and writing our own bills on the air.
Awesome.
And so we'll be connecting with legislators, state and federal, and I've already talked to Congressman Gates and some others. So there's a lot of things going to be happening here.
Cool.
And I'm just saying, you know, whatever happens, happens. I'll take it as far as I can, but I know I can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm sort of putting my faith out there and connecting with folks like you and other people as we have other guests to see what we can accomplish.
And God is faithful in your the steps of faith that you're taking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you trust that the door is opening and you trust that, you know, you can walk forward, then, you know, those steps are going to be directed.
Yeah,
so.
It's already prepared.
But you got to take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And this is what I say, don't be afraid to risk.
Oh, yeah.
Because you never know what could happen, and you're not doing it alone. You know,
sure.
And that's once you sort of realize that, you think, okay, and what's the worst thing that can happen? You have to consider that.
Yeah.
The worst thing is, you know, I just it didn't work out, and I do something else.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really a thought in my head. No, seriously, I mean, I absolutely said, okay, this is what I'm doing. It's going to work. I'm going to be fine. This will be a national show.
Oh,
I am going to change radio,
mm-hmm.
and things are going to happen. We have a couple minutes left. Sum up. Let me know what you whatever you want to say to the folks out
one
there.
One quick thing I want to throw out there
yeah.
Is to say, guys, make it a point and make it a priority to get here.
Okay.
If you have a work schedule, see who can, you know, cover a shift for you.
Okay.
If you're going to talk to your family, say you're got a wife and kids, see what you can do. You know, wives, women who are out there, do what you can. Volunteer to babysit the kids.
Yeah.
We'll watch for that.
Help the guys out.
You know, and
yeah.
help you guys get to this conference, because
okay.
this is going to help put a lot of other things in society back in order.
And it'll help them when they come back to the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, every man who comes to this is going to be a better husband, a better father, a better man in general.
Okay.
But I also want to say that, you know, men, we're going to be doing a women's conference here in September. And
we'll
so
get you back for that.
We'll come back.
No, seriously.
But
yeah.
men,
yeah.
y'all need to encourage your wives.
Okay.
You go to attend the women's conference.
Okay.
They're just going to become better women, better
They're so refreshed by
Christ.
It, too.
Right.
Yeah, First City Church as a whole, as I said earlier, is a church of unconditional love.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you,
I can see that.
That's
pretty obvious from everything we've talked
is.
About.
It,
yeah.
It's great. And
yeah.
that was what was our hook, line, and sinker. So
okay.
if you are searching for a church that you just want to be a part of, even just to sit and listen or
yeah.
just enjoy the worship or just actively get a part of, really, come visit us 9 and 11 o'clock, 1301 East Gadsden,
okay.
right there in Pensacola.
Cross Street, where is it?
Well, yeah, Cervantes, a block off of Cervantes,
yeah.
so Gadsden and 13th.
Where they
if you know where that Krispy Kreme donut place
Church
is.
Church and Donuts. There you go. Now I'm going.
There you go. If you know where that is,
I can handle that.
That's on 9th and Cervantes. Just go four blocks up to 13th, make a right, and you'll see us.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Brent, you got some more?
I would just say I think we're going to have a fun time. I know for me it's always when, you know, even just this radio show, getting together and just getting to talk as men and guys.
Fun.
Yeah. And
oh, yeah. It,
but it's such a short time. It's just,
in fact, we have like 20 seconds.
Right. So you're leaving, and it's going to be that time, Friday and Saturday. So okay. We're going to have a good time.
Sounds good. So First City Church, address one more time.
1301 East Gadsden Street, Pensacola, Florida.
And Facebook page is?
First City Church. But check us out on our
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Action Radio, dangerously cool.
My microphone at some point during the recording, and it broke the sound and it broke the signal, and I thought it was going to come back on, but it didn't. So CJ, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, good. So, but you couldn't before I played the fifes and drums.
Correct.
Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to plug my microphone. We're just going to do it the old-fashioned way. So one of the backups we have to the show. Oh, I can't do that. That's not going to work either. Well, plug my mic back in. Because then I hear a duplicate of myself. So we'll leave the microphone on. And hopefully this will cut out in a second. Ah, there it goes. Okay, good. So mic's on, but I'm talking to the cell phone. So I think I've corrected my technical difficulties for now. This is Blog Talk. We have occasional little glitches. So I just put my phone on a stack of books and put it up at mic level. And just use the speakerphone. So, CJ, did you get a chance to listen to some of our men's chat on this Gay Pride Month, listening to a bunch of straight guys talking about being guys? I thought it was
I did. I caught the last few minutes of it, and I actually looked up the church online and whatnot. So, yes, I did. I would love to go back and, you know, I heard him saying that they were having a men's event, and then they were going to have a women's event. I assume that was around Father's Day, but on the calendar, I didn't see, like, the dates of a conference or anything other than that. But I did tune in, and I'm looking at their site right now. So,
yeah, well, part of the problem is that was a 5-year-old interview. That was back at my old radio station, WBY. And so as I was explaining to people earlier that I had for a year and 4 months, I had my dream job. I came out to Florida from California literally 4 months after open heart surgery, which is probably the dumbest and best thing I've ever done. But I don't mind taking a risk. So anyway, so I came out here about 150 pounds overweight because I blew up like a balloon after surgery. And I've lost most of it, just about 30, maybe 40 pounds more to go, but that'll be gone soon. Anyway, point being that I was able to have group discussions because we had this table, this round table. And I can't do that anymore because I broadcast from home, from my little cottage here. And most of the folks on the show are in different places. You're in North Carolina. Jonathan's up in Virginia. Pianki's in Missouri. Other folks call in from California, Arizona. Sometimes we get international calls. You know, we've got a Skype line. And so there's no way to have those same discussions. And I don't have the same contact with the community because that station no longer exists. And it was taken over by another station who sold, you know, job they thought was to take my station off the air, which they did. Made it some sports recording, Fox News, boring thing like that. So it was one of the last independent voices here, WBY 1330 AM, Northwest Florida's news and talk leader. And so that's where I got my radio start. And here we are now, Blog Talk Radio, 5 years later. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, I think that's great, you know, with what you're doing. Obviously, everything is growing and getting words out about certain things and having all these amazing individuals on your show. I think it's great, and I love tuning in and listening to some of the information that you're sharing. And it's interesting, you know, some of the topics that we're going to talk about today. And just so you know, like I said, my computer's been shutting down all morning, as you know, so I'm trying to pull it back up. I had to restart it. I'm having all kinds of technical challenges myself this morning.
Uh-oh. This is the FBI blackout that Josie keeps telling us about. She says everything's going to shut down for 10 days, and Donald Trump's going to ride in with the military, and they're going to take over the country and settle all this and arrest thousands of people. I'm like, no, Josie, that's not going to happen. It's wishful thinking, but it ain't happening. Anyway, so but when both of us have computer problems, well, I literally hit my microphone. And Blog Talk's weird. Once the signal is broken, you know, you plugging it back in does not get it back. It's kind of picky about that. I'm still trying to get gauges, levels, you know, digital levels so that I know when I'm putting out a signal and when I'm not. And Blog Talk still hasn't done that. Got it on my Adobe Audition program, but not on on Blog Talk. Anyway, we should talk about single guys, or not maybe single, but just men and health and how many men, you know, come to you for alternative medicine as opposed to women. Because I think most guys, you know, being survivalist pioneers and all that kind of stuff, are not as likely to seek out different medical treatments. They're not as likely to seek out the traditional ones, preferring to wait until they have stage 4 cancer as opposed to stage 1. Because they don't want to know. It's gets in the way, you know, so we can talk about that sometime too. Anyway, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, my big things and I'm going to be talking about these tonight, is, you know, I did have a host. I didn't do it all myself, but I hosted a Patriot gathering this past weekend in my neck of the woods for the first time. And
how was that?
It was phenomenal. All the feedback was great. And it was so good. And I had a couple other truthers and anons and people in the movement, you know, there. And I had a handful of people who actually traveled in, like, probably from hours and hours away, and they spent the night before here locally to attend the event. So, again, it wasn't a large event, but there were about 20-ish people there. And so to start somewhere, right, if you've been paying attention to any of the podcasts or, you know, any of the podcasters at night, your talk news radio, you have to start somewhere. You know, it's like gathering around in like-minded people and putting together action steps to move forward, you know.
This sounds familiar. That's
yeah.
Very familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very good event. The conversations and the individuals that I was able to meet and information that was gathered and shared, it was really, really good. In fact, as we were under a, you know, I rented out, we rented out a pavilion just in case of rain, and it ended up being a gorgeous, gorgeous day. There were like two or three people in the park. I mean, it was a packed day because they had lacrosse tournaments going on, so the park was full. So there were a lot of people there, you know, observing, you know, noticing that the pavilion was full, and I had red, white, and blue balloons, you know, and tablecloths, and, you know, it was very evident that, you know, we were having a gathering of such, however you want to define it, right? And so there were two or three, believe it or not, gentlemen that actually came up to us and started mingling and actually sat down and started talking about all the conspiracy things, all the money things, all the things, and they were very open. They're like, yeah, I'm ready for this to be done. And so it was kind of cool, though, just to have people kind of question us and actually know what was going on, even though there was like three of them, you know, right, that came up to us. But that was kind of cool to hear that, to be in a bubble with like-minded people who, you know, listen to people like you, listen to podcasts at night, et cetera, people that, you know, just, they know. And so that was very encouraging to see. It truly was.
Well, the bubble's getting bigger. You know, there's more and more people that are realizing that everything they've been told was a lie. So we're getting a bigger bubble, you know, and this is fascinating. Yeah.
Exactly.
So when you say truthers, you mentioned a couple of groups. I want to kind of clear up who those groups are. So truthers, what's a truther? What truth are they?
I have been digging into all the conspiracy things a lot longer than myself, you know, who have been a lot of digging on all of the corruption and all of the lies, you know, going back to way back when, you know, people who have had a lot more tenacity. I like that word. A lot more tenacity than I have.
Good word. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other one you mentioned was Anon. Are we talking QAnon? Because we used to have a QAnon report. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So QAnon's not a bad word around here. And so
I love it. So,
now,
yeah.
As you know. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I strongly believe that there are real conspiracies and ones that are distracting. And Josie and I debate this pretty much every week. In fact, I think she's listening right now. The real conspiracies, the election was stolen. You know, COVID, the government policy was a complete hoax. We didn't need any of the stuff they did. Those are real conspiracies. And it, conspiracies mean that people plotted together to do evil. To me, the distracting conspiracies are that Trump's, you know, running everything through Space Force, that they're going to ride in with several thousand military people and take over the government. I don't believe that. In fact, I don't even want that. Or that all our lawyers are registered in England, or that we can be sovereign citizens and that we can not drive with a driver's license and not pay tax, and that there's $500,000 check waiting for all of us in the Treasury Department because of our birth certificate. That's a bunch of nonsense. And so one of the biggest things we need to do as patriots, as America First, as independents, is to distinguish between the real conspiracies that are destroying our country, like the deep state, and the fake ones that are just distractions put to us by the deep state to divide us. And so that's why I make a very distinct line. And I don't know if you did that. I don't know if anybody does that. I'm starting to do it all the time now. And I think it's critical for us to do that. So do you make distinctions? Tell me about what you're meeting with, and were there disagreements as to which were the real conspiracies and which were the distractions?
You know, there might be some points that we agree to disagree on this because, you know, for me, I have no hard, concrete evidence of anything. But I personally, you know, like a lot, when I'm talking about a lot of, right, and I consider myself to an extent a truther because of the different podcasting that I do, as you know, like on other platforms. I'm open to all the things because there are people out there that want the other information. Just because I may not totally have all my eggs in one basket or believe in a certain thing or another doesn't mean that somebody else don't, and they want the information. So as playing that neutral, you know, position, just me personally, with my personal platform, I prefer to give out all the information that's out there and let people use their own discernment and decide what they want to hold on to and what they don't. That's my personal position. With saying other truthers, I mean, again, people who have been digging into the corruption and awake a whole lot longer than I have and know a whole lot more in that arena than what I do, that I have been learning from and taking, again, hearing the information and then deciphering for myself what I choose to hold stock in or not. Because the way I go about it and look at it is, say I'm wrong. Right, and I choose not to believe in XYZ, and one of those XYZs occur, right? I can say I haven't been closed-minded like the normies. I could say, well, crud, I did hear that. I didn't think that was real or going to happen, but I'll be damned, it did, you know? So I'm not – I've opened myself up to all the information, to receive all the information, and then that way you know, whatever does or doesn't come to fruition, I have been exposed to that, and I'm not, I don't even know if that makes sense. So that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, I'm more direct, though, because I will give both sides, and then I will tell you what I think. I think that Flight 800 was brought down by a missile. I don't think there's any dispute on that. And all the Navy ships under it who were firing missiles are proof. And besides the seats themselves, the missile fuel track, the whole bit. I believe that 9/11, you know, though the terrorists did attack those buildings, they did fly airliners in. But I also believe that government demolition charges brought down those buildings, plus Building 7 that wasn't hit by an airplane. I believe we landed on the moon. And those that say that we don't, I think are crazy. And I believe that Franklin Roosevelt knew we were going to be attacked at Pearl Harbor, let it happen so we'd get into the war. So there's a lot of you really have to pick, you know, these things and look at them carefully individually. And so if people get labeled a conspiracy theorist, then they feel like they can't believe in anything because they don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theorist. But a conspiracy theorist just means you have a theory about conspiracies. I have a theory about lots of conspiracies. I have a theory for each conspiracy. So that would make me a conspiracy theorist because I formulate theories on conspiracies, which are things that are done wrong by people that have conspired together. That's how I see it. Okay.
Right. Right. I understand. And then, like I said, the Anon, you know, we talked about Q, we talked to and, you know,
We need a QAnon report. What's the latest? I need a QAnon report. I haven't had one for a while. We used to have someone that did just that. We actually had a report labeled the QAnon report. It was pretty fun.
Oh, well, I have a great contact that I can bring on as a guest for sure.
Oh, good.
We've been discussing via text and stuff the thing about the plane that went down and, you know, the lack of survivors.
Yeah, well, here's what I know about that citation, because I'm a pilot. So, I mean, I know a lot about aviation. So I don't believe in chemtrails. But tell me what you know. And we're a little off track here. This is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's not my area of expertise. But from what I've been reading and stuff, the latest as far as what's happened, you know, because of the lack of showing wreckage and different things of that, you know, the conspiracy is that was not a real thing, or it was staged and it did happen, but there was nobody, you know, on the plane. But yet there was one person there that I got a picture of, like, waving, that wasn't bloody, wasn't this, wasn't that. And so there's a lot going on that he could explain better than myself, because he's been digging into that information. I have not. I've just kind of been...
Yeah, I need a good conspiracy reporter. I love stuff like this. And then, again, we get to decide, you know, individually what we think. But from what I know, it was definitely an airplane. There was definitely a sonic boom. You know, F-16s were scrambled to go after it. It definitely flew over Washington, which is restricted airspace. Yeah. I know. I've seen the charts. And we do know that the father was a huge Trump supporter.
Yeah.
And so he's a Trump donor. But
I don't think there was any wreckage. There wasn't any, you know. And so
I've seen a picture of an airplane, but it doesn't look like a Citation. This is what got me curious. I was like, wait a minute, that's not a Citation tail. I don't know what it is. It looks more like a torpedo from a Navy thing, but it looks like more like a ship than an airplane. So now I'm curious. So I want to start digging into this. The other thing is, of course, I always immediately go with pilots because they fly in an oxygen-deprived environment. Those airplanes are pressurized to 8,000 feet, which is 3,000 feet above Denver. Okay, so we're talking really thin air, 15% oxygen, all right? And so they're much more susceptible to COVID shot injuries and passing out because they're in a deprived oxygen environment. And so I'm wondering if the COVID shot plays into this. There's another problem.
Yeah. I don't know. Could be. But again, how do you know? How are we going to know? I don't know that you are.
Well, you never know, but you get as much evidence as you can, and then you draw your own conclusions.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct. Agreed. But, yeah, so I can definitely connect you with him. So that's one of the things. And going back to your original question, I do think now I have had several male clientele and people come to me, but the majority of them are definitely, definitely women. And typically if a gentleman comes to me, it's because their significant other has encouraged them to or wanted them to.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or has wanted to do something together, you know, like the people I just wrapped up sessions with, they are a couple, a married couple, a young married couple. And so they wanted separate sessions, but to do their sessions together for different reasoning. So, you know, like one encouraged the other. But what's interesting with that couple is that the man actually encouraged his wife to do sessions with me. So, you know, I do see quite the variety, but as a general statement, your statement is correct. Most of the time, I would say 80% of the time, it's the women that reach out. And then if their partner does something, it's usually as a result of them taking the lead on it. It's usually not the other way around. Although, again, that was the situation with the individual who just wrapped up their 3-month session with me. So, you know, there are those exceptions to the rules.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting how this all works. For example, on Action Radio, I have an Action Radio life and health coaching page. It's almost all women. And
wow. Nice.
I have an Action Radio man page, which is obviously all for men. And a lot of times I put the same post on both pages, which is really interesting.
Wow.
So depending on what it is, not always, because a lot of wellness stuff is geared more to women anyway. But for the guys, I'll put some different health things, different prescription, different medicine stuff, especially if it's guy-related medicine. We'll go there.
Right.
But a lot of times there are posts that go on the same group, and these are two completely different groups, and yet, you know, for health and for health issues, it's the same information, but guys are more likely to read it on a man page than they would on a life and health coaching page, which I find interesting.
Right. No, I mean, you're right. So that's kind of the way it is. But sometimes it takes encouragement from the female, you know, and I don't know why that is, because again, I have seen it go the opposite way, but it's a rare thing.
No, I'll tell you why, because women talk about every individual issue with every other woman. You guys talk to each other about everything, and guys, you know, we'll talk sports, we'll talk beer, we'll talk, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
But most guys aren't going to go, you know, I got this weird pain here that I'm not quite sure what it is, and I've been taking my, you know, my vitamins, and I've been looking into various alternative treatments. Guys don't talk like that. So guys, open up. Try the alternative treatments. This is why I have CJ on, okay? It's not just for women. Anyway.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting because I know that we're going to be going into another topic here in a minute, but, you know, a list of things that people don't know. And in fact, prior to this radio show, interestingly enough, I came across a specific list. I mean, like I said, some of the things I already knew, but to have an actual list, I'm going to print out and laminate and make sure I give access to certain individuals. But a list of detox foods and what foods do what, like in alphabetical order, you know?
Yeah,
like
I need that.
People don't know, you know, about onions,
yep.
They help to clean out the lungs. Pumpkin seeds help reduce inflammation. You know, just sea vegetables, you know, just different things that most, the average person does not know about, you know? So using natural foods to attempt to heal the body. But one of the things I was thinking about is, how do I say this? I'm all about, there's a middle of the road for me for self-diagnosing. I think if you have an infection or you have a cut or you, you know, just something mild, if you have something going on, right, a cold, sniffles, lung congestion, whatever, something that's obvious, you know, there are some times where you need some sort of a diagnostic measure to measure that there is an issue going on. Then the question becomes, if you know that there's an A, B, C, or D challenge going on, what are the different solutions available to you to take care of that problem? So I don't necessarily always encourage self-diagnosing unless it's, you know, something minor. But I'm saying if you know you have a bladder infection or you know you have a kidney stone or you know you have something, you know what I mean, whatever, you cut your finger, you know, you use aloe vera from a plant or something else. If you know that you have XYZ going on and you have some of these natural resources and also maybe some natural holistic herbal remedies and vitamins, then you can choose what to utilize and what not to try to take care of the problem first before going to a more pharmaceutical drastic measure. So having a list is really, really a good thing to have.
Well, yeah. And I was just thinking, in fact, I have to, I'm typing in a sort of an emergency email message as we're talking here. We have a huge guest coming on tomorrow. Tony Lyons, who's the CEO of Skyhorse Publishing, that did the book, that Robert Francis Kennedy's book. And so he's coming back now.
Okay.
So as I'm just typing this up as we're talking. But what I was thinking of as we're talking, so let's make sure I do that. Okay, there we go. All right, so that's fine. So I'll take care of that. So life goes on. I'm producing the show. I do everything. It's kind of crazy here, working on a producer. But one of the things I notice is that people, I mean, there's an appropriate thing for depending on what's going on. It's like, you know, you mentioned onions are good for lungs. So if you have bacterial pneumonia, you know, eating onions is probably not appropriate. It's probably a bit late at that point. You know, you might want antibiotics because you could be dead in, like, you know, hours.
Right.
So the appropriate thing might be, you know, I mean, we have pharmaceutical antibiotics for a reason. But what's not appropriate is to take antibiotics, you know, every day in case, you know, just on the off chance that you might get bacterial pneumonia someday. And so you want to find the appropriate treatment. And so natural, I think, is most of the time, build up your immune system, use the natural products. You know, you talked about pumpkin seeds and onions. I mean, that's part of my natural diet anyway. You know, so I'm getting those good things. You know, and so, but again, don't shy away from diagnostic tools and blood tests, you know, just because you want to go, oh, like, I want to be like all alternative, man. No, that's stupid. Use Western medicine when it works. You know, if you break your bone, are you going to go chant? No, you're going to go get your bone set. You know, but do you find that people, they're, I mean, it's just as bad to be exclusively, you know, alternative, you know, and, you know, you're not going to hang crystals if, you know, if you got cancer, maybe a bit less, you know, whereas beforehand, it might be perfectly acceptable to use, you know, essential oils and all kinds of things to prevent stuff. So there's appropriate nature. I don't think we talk enough about the line because you can do both. I mean, use everything that's available to you. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Tell me what you think.
Yep. I think, and you know, it's again, like you just said, God forbid you're in a car accident, right? And you need a shoulder reset or something like that. You know, there is a time and a place for conventional medicine and things like that, you know, but it shouldn't always be the first go-to. But again, I think for diagnostic reasons, if you need to do that, I personally don't have any challenges with that. And then if you have XYZ that, say, on a scale of 1 to 10 is a 4 or 5, something like that, again, that's just my opinion, and you want to go about a holistic manner, you know, like turmeric and honey, getting, you know, powdered turmeric, you can't really have too much of it, turmeric and honey is the best antibiotic on the face of the planet that doctors aren't going to tell you about, but you have to be consistent. You know, with it. So again, just knowing your options and being open to using the tools and information that you have, even when it comes to traditional
turmeric and honey, huh? Because turmeric by itself is tasteless. That's why I get curry powder, which is mostly turmeric anyway. So a lot of times, some things that are really good for you are tasteless. So you want to put something.
Yeah.
Honey.
Except for ginger. Ginger is very potent, but I love ginger. I've acquired a taste for it.
Oh. I'll get sushi just to get the. Well, what's a good source of ginger? Because if I buy raw ginger, it's got all that Glad wrap around it, that natural wrapping, and it's a lot of work. So can you buy, you know, bottled ginger? Or what's the best way to get ginger if you don't want to prepare it yourself?
Well, unfortunately, preparing it for yourself is the best way. Buying organic ginger and cleaning it well, you know, like you would a potato, like scrubbing it really, really good, taking off some of the outside and using fresh, whole, organic ginger is the best, is absolutely the best. You know, you can get it in powder form. The problem is, again, you don't know if there's been any processing done, if it's cold processed, if there's some heat, anything applied to it. And you can always make your own ginger, you know, by chopping the fresh ginger up. Like for me, I'll put it in, you know, a little blender with, you know, lemons and cucumbers, lemon, cucumber, and ginger juice, you know, take a shot of that in my HCQ that I make. And I take a shot of that every morning. So, you know, unfortunately, to answer your question, in my opinion, there is no other better source than organic whole ginger. There are other things that you can get, you know, but, you know, if you can do it and take the extra 5 minutes to do it yourself, that's a better way to go.
Right. I just have to get a blender. I'm appliance challenged at this point because if I could buy a jar of ginger that looks pretty good, you know, I might just do that. Is the pink ginger any good, or do you need to get clear stuff?
It's the same as garlic, right? As a pain in the rear end to peel and to steam and, you know, whatever.
Garlic, I get. You know what you do with garlic? Oh, no, I found a solution. I saw it in a movie. What you do is you take a clove of garlic, cut off the end of it, put it under a knife and just smash it. And when you smash it, you can pull the whole skin off in one piece. And smashing it releases all the good. Yeah, just cut off the end, the stem end, right, that connects to the clove itself. So you cut that little end off, and you put the whole garlic clove under the base of a knife, you know, the base blade of the knife, and you put your, like, hand on it and just squish it, crush it completely. Well, not completely, but just crush it. And when you do that, the skin separates from the clove, and the skin comes off in one thing. You don't have to peel anything. The whole thing comes off. Then just cut up your garlic and throw it in your salad. Yeah, what I do.
Yeah.
The things you learn on this show.
I'm just saying that's kind of like the same concept because you can go and buy minced garlic, you know, in those glass jars and stuff, and that's fine. I'm just saying anything that you can take in its original state, going back to your point of ginger, anything you can take in its original state and take that extra 5 minutes to do it yourself is a much better option.
Okay. Well, I'll see if I can get some raw ginger and play with it. So what do you do again? Put it in a blender and then what?
I put it in a blender with cucumber and lemon, and I make like a mason jar of it. And I'll take some of that, and then my HCQ, I just put it like in an alcohol shot glass, and I take a shot of it every morning.
Oh, boy.
And I do. I have my little shot glass here, you know, that I put vodka or whatever in, and I do my HCQ shot and then my shot of the lemon, cucumber, and ginger mixture every single morning.
When's the last time you were sick?
Sick as far as even with a cold or something. Back when I had the virus, probably 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, I think everybody got COVID. It's not that our immune systems were bad. It's that our immune systems had never seen it before. So I think everybody got COVID. But the question is how quickly you got over it. I got over it with a couple of days of rest, even though I had it for about 2 weeks. But once it was gone, it was gone. I never got it back. I had one cold after having a hospital exam, but I think that was the hospital more than anything else. Now, here's something weird, though, and I don't know if you've seen this, too, that once I had COVID back in January of 2020, except for that one cold, I haven't been sick with anything. And I'm wondering, have you seen evidence that COVID, because it was so new, it was a man-made bioweapon organism and our bodies had never seen it, for those of us that let our natural immunity take care of it, did our body become much more aware and attuned to man-made viruses because of the experience our immune system had with COVID?
Could be. You know, that one's a challenging one for me to answer only because, you know, my opinion was that I think, and I don't know if we talked about this or not. I can't remember. I think maybe we did briefly, but, you know, when I was sick with the virus, mine lasted for about 10 days. Fortunate enough, you know, I didn't have any of the breathing challenges or OT2 challenge. You know, I didn't have anything like that. And I didn't have like 105 fever or anything crazy like that. But I was sick by no means. I mean, I was pretty sick. But my breathing was fine, and I would say maybe my temperature at the highest got up to 101, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I never really got a fever. Yeah, that's interesting. I never really got a fever.
I was sick for probably a solid 10 days. And for me, even though I felt like my case really compared to a lot of people, and we know this, was mild in comparison to, you know, but bad for me because it sucked, right? But I do believe, and I don't like, you know, proclaiming it over myself, that I had suffered from some mild long-term virus symptoms. you know, I was dealing with, and I still do every once in a while, deal with some liver inflammation challenges. And they've been a lot better because, again, I'm always open. I use the nicotine patch, you know, and I do different things. And prior to having the virus, I never had any liver challenges. And what's interesting, though, is let's go back to diagnostics. All my diagnostic testing that I had, because, again, I'm human, you know, and I was freaking out. I knew COVID was a bioweapon. I was learning, you know, I used the ivermectin. I used, you know, all the things to recover. But it had done something to my body, right? So, so all of my diagnostic tests came back totally fine, with the exception of when I mentioned to you guys that I do thermography and not mammograms. Well, that was showing inflammation there. But my enzymes, my liver enzymes, are perfectly fine. Like, my liver functions. You know, there are a couple other numbers that are slightly out of whack that were never out of whack ever before I had the virus. So I've definitely been implementing some things myself, you know, and it may be something that, unfortunately, I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. I pray not, you know. You know, it's nothing debilitating, but it's definitely a difference for me that cramps my lifestyle sometimes because I'm a, you know, super active person. So, you know, going back to the point of diagnostics, let's just roll it back there. If you need to get a diagnostic, get it done. You know, but I'm not on any pharmaceutical drugs to take care of the once in a while inflammation, every once in a while discomfort. You know, I'm using the nicotine patches. I'm using CardioMiracle. I'm using ivermectin a couple times a week. Like, I'm using the things that are natural that I know are helping me because I feel it, and I know those things, using them the way I'm using them, they're not going to harm me to utilize them.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So that's kind of that. But I know, let's squirrel a minute. So you sent me an interesting article on chickens, and, you know, I've been having some computer issues, so I did read the majority of it, and I wanted to go through and read the details about that blank screen that I showed you on my computer. It is interesting. This kind of goes hand in hand with some of the information that we've been hearing about the government trying to regulate even gardens now. And if you are registering your garden, you're a damn fool. You know, it's like they put it out there and it's like, I'm going to grow a garden. There's no way I'm doing any of that. You know, I think maybe it's a scare tactic, but going back to knowing, you know, some of the chickens that we think are organic, they're not anymore. You know, and that's why for me, a lot of the eggs that my daughter consumes, I'm not a big egg person. I've just never even liked eggs. It's a texture thing for me. I know I probably need to start eating them. But I get from my girlfriend, who they have their own chickens, their own eggs. They don't spray anything. We get them right out of the ground, chicken and hen eggs and stuff like that. And again, you can scroll back as to, well, what's going into the feed? What's going into this? Are you just letting them graze? They just let them graze outside. Well, what's going into the soil that's coming in from the air? The soil is so depleted. I mean, you can keep going and going and going down the rabbit hole. So I think with them trying to make the chickens and the eggs not organic and deceive us with the word organic, how things are starting to filtrate into the organic, clean world, that's the sad truth. But again, you go back to, okay, so what? What are you going to do about it? Is there really anything you can do? You can fight back. You can write the letters. You can do the bills and see what happens. But as far as consumption, you can only do what you can do, you know. And that's why I've encouraged people, even if you're buying organic produce, which I encourage you to do, as we talked about with the Dirty Dozen, et cetera, to always, in fact, I have them in the sink right now, always use, you know, you don't need to use an expensive cleaner or whatever. You can just use white vinegar and baking soda. And all you need is a little bit. Like, I've got strawberries. I just clean a bunch of strawberries right now, you know, that are organic, but I still clean them with baking soda before the call, baking soda and vinegar. So, you know, for them trying to destroy the organic eggs and the chickens and things like that and regulate them, that's no surprise. The thing is, how are we going to fight back, number one? Number two is, are you still going to buy eggs? I mean, you can only do what you can do. Go to a local farmer, you know, instead of going to the grocery store.
That's the key. You know, as much as I love legislation, I love fighting these things, and I've written, you know, something that's going to be a very interesting challenge, you know, a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. that's going to be worldwide news. You know, if Matt Gaetz announces it tomorrow night in that town hall where I'm presenting it, that will be worldwide news. But that's going to be a big fight. But however, what can you do at the personal level? See, the problem is these big companies, what they're doing is they want people to think they're organic when they're really factory food. They want people to think it's meat when it's really, you know, organic compound. And so the biggest problem is labeling. If they were honest about it, and we talked about this earlier with Pianki when he was on the show, that it's like the RSB or the RBHT, the growth hormone. Every product on the shelves says they don't use the growth hormone, because if they said they did use the growth hormone, we know nobody's going to buy it. So they all they can't use it. So they can't use it. But of course, the lobbyists have got this other label that says, but no significant difference has been found between growth hormone and non-growth hormone. So if that's the case, why is the public only buying the non-growth hormone milk and cream and things? Because we think it's better. So the way out of this is, you know, and you've talked about this too. We've talked about two organic avocado oil and mayonnaise companies, Chosen, and what's the other one? There's another
company.
Say
that one more time. Okay.
The organic mayonnaise, the avocado oil mayonnaise.
Oh, Chosen and Primal Kitchen.
Primal, yeah. So we need those companies sponsoring our show because we've mentioned them a bunch of times. But they're good.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I need to.
And I've got away some seed oils, right? But you can research the companies. You can just you can start by reading the labels. You know, you can then go look at their websites. You can call them up. You can look up stories about these companies. Is it a lot of work? Sure. But how much is your health worth? To me, I'd rather spend the extra money on avocado oil, non-seed oil mayonnaise that I know is better for me, because I spent a little bit of time doing some company research. Now, Chosen's a couple dollars less than Primal. It's like Prime and Choice is like beef grades. But every once in a while, you know, but Primal's like $10 a jar. I mean, it's really expensive, but you don't use as much, it'll last longer. But again, how much is your health worth? And so that's what it comes to.
Yeah, they do that on purpose. You notice that they make the food that's not so good for you pretty inexpensive, relatively speaking, right? Everything has gone up, I know, but relatively speaking. And then anything that is, you know, made with, let's use this way, made with cleaner ingredients, they jack the prices up so that a lot of people cannot purchase them, you know, even if they want to, you know, unless you're making major sacrifices, you know, and we're blessed or I'm blessed to be able to make those healthier sacrifices. But, you know, I just don't go get my hair done as much anymore. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you just kind of have to pick and choose, you know, you have the money. So cut out Hulu, you know, don't spend money on Hulu and, you know, put that money towards cleaner grocery supplies. You know, you can find the money depending on where you're willing to scrimp, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, there's some things I want to do that I haven't been able to do yet because of money, but the show's growing. And as we keep going, like I say, I got a fabulous guest tomorrow, national public figure, you know, Skyhorse Publishing, Tony Lyons, works directly with Robert Francis Kennedy. Because I know Dr. Judy Mikovits, who knows Robert Francis Kennedy, I've got connections all over the place right now. And so those kind of things are going to pay off one day. This show will be massive. We will break through our censorship. And all of us involved with it are going to be very well-known public figures. I mean, I'm absolutely convinced of that. Until then, I'll have to wait on some of the treatments that I want to try and my reverse osmosis water filter and some of the other things. But I'll get there, you know, and hopefully sooner. But like I say, it all comes down to doing what you can. But it's not that hard to research companies. And I don't think they're more expensive because they're purposely jacking them up. I think the others are artificially inexpensive because they're a bunch of crap. So in other words, if you've got a factory, we talked about this earlier with the organic, you know, I was reading that article. There are buildings that house, you know, 200,000 chickens in one building.
Right.
That's a factory.
Wow.
You know, they're all in a cage. They can't go anywhere. They lay an egg, and then it rolls down a conveyor belt, and it all goes into the machine, and it gets washed, and, you know, of course, you get micro cracks, and the chlorine gets in, and those eggs are terrible, even if they're, quote, organic. Whereas I'd rather have, you know, Joe's farm, you know, where he's got 50 chickens, and they all run around this yard, and they eat organic grain, and, you know, then they lay one egg a day, and it's great. And I'll wait for those. I got a friend that where I get my eggs from, same kind of thing. And so it's a very big difference to be able to research and do local. But the best thing is start local. You know, we have a Josie was telling us about a local slaughter place that, that slaughters a couple of cattle each year, and they're beef. They're grass-fed. So that's better.
Right.
So you got to get a little creative. And if the cheaper prices are only because they're cheating. Now, here's where I have the big problem. This is what I think you'll agree with. But like your comment, anyway, that what these big companies really want is they want to lie. They want people to think they're organic while they're making factory food rather than be honest and say, we have factory chickens. They're stuck in a small cage. They're miserable. And you're going to get the eggs from a miserable chicken. You know, I mean, that's not, I'm not going to say that, but that's basically what's going on. As opposed to Fred's Farm, where there are happy chickens. They're running around outside, and they're clucking away, you know, and you get better eggs. So be honest. If you're organic, have strict criteria for what organic is, and then don't make, you know, Biff's Factory Chicken Farm organic when it's really not. That's the problem. As long as we have honest labels, we can make the decision. And that's a Federal Trade Commission issue. So that really comes down to government. Government's screwing up because they're allowing the lobbyists to change organic to mean, you know, everything when it really shouldn't. And I think that's the problem. GMO, same thing. As long as they label things their GMO, I can choose not to have them. But I don't want them labeling, you know, GMO foods as non-GMO because that, then we can't tell the difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think so. So, you know, the best thing that we can do, I mean, it's coming up on, you know, it's planting season. And so I know starting to open up, I know I just went like and got a mint plant and a celery plant and some things like that. I definitely do not have a green thumb, but I do grow some of my produce and things like that here at my home. And so we're just beginning to do that. And my daughter loves to go to farmers market. In fact, it's interesting too. I just switched out. I would say over the past 2 weeks, I threw away. I'm not a big cook by any means, but I do like to cook when I cook and the healthy things that I like to cook. And so I just threw out all of my nasty pans, and I went and bought myself some just staples, not a whole set, some staples of some good, clean, non-toxic cookware. And I didn't buy a complete set of it. I bought bits and pieces from different companies that I've researched and liked. And so,
are they ceramic?
Pardon me?
Are they ceramic?
No, they are not. I bought some stainless steel, and then I have some, golly, Pete, why am I just, cast iron.
So what's the best cookware as far as cookware goes? You've got cast iron, stainless, and you've got ceramic, and then you've got the Teflon-coated cookware. How would you rate those?
Well, it's one of those things. I did my own, like, research. I just looked it up. There's, like, several different brands. It depends on what your financial position is, and that's why, like I said, there's I think I mentioned this before, and I don't have any, but it's on my list to get as far as a full set goes. So I actually, unfortunately, I'm just going to be real with your listeners. Unfortunately, I just went into Home Goods, and I had a list of different cookware that I was looking for, and they had some of them. Unfortunately, it's pathetic that the ones they sell are made in China, but they are non-toxic. So, again, I just bought a couple different pieces that I wanted to use, and then there is, and I've been trying to get a hold of them. I have not purchased any yet because they are pretty salty. It's called, it's Brand 360. Brand 360, you can look it up, 360 Cookware. And it's extremely costly. It's very, very good non-toxic cookware, and it's all made in the United States. So I'm trying to connect with them just because of what I do to see if I can get a discount code, see if I can get a free piece, see if I can get something. Because I would love to support that type of a company and buy a piece. And I think I probably will, but like one big cook pan is $180, $200, something like that. But again, they're made in the U.S., they're non-toxic, and they're one of those things that are guaranteed for life. So if the pan gets burnt, if something goes wrong with the pan, they will replace it free of charge. you know, but obviously you have to cook on it the way it's designed to be cooked on, you know, and not use metal to scratch it and use, like, you know, bamboo cooking utensils or, you know, Rubbermaid or, you know, something like that that's not going to scratch. But
right.
You can, if you Google or pull up DuckDuckGo, Brave, whatever you want to use, and put in the top 5 non-toxic cookware, it's going to give you a list of 5 or 6, and they're all different price ranges, which is the whole point of it. So, you know, you do the best that you can do. And so for me, I really wanted a whole good set, and I really want 360, but I can't do a whole set because it's like it's over $3,000 for a whole set.
Oh,
geez. Yeah.
You know, I get one.
Sale.
I got 3. I
but
got
I'm probably going to get pieces of time. What?
I got a frying pan, I got a grill pan, and I got a cast iron skillet. And I'll probably get rid of, I'll probably get a grill skillet, and then it'll be done. I'll get rid of, but I want a new fry pan. So I want either a ceramic or something else. I'm not quite sure.
For a new fry pan, I bought Viking. Because Viking for a nice size one, I think I paid either $30 or $40. But it's guaranteed and it's very heavy. And it's a stainless steel one. And then I have a couple pieces of cast iron. And one of them, you know, I do use on my outside grill. So I don't have a whole set of anything, but I have a pot that has a steamer in it. I have my crock pot I very rarely use. I have the 2 new frying pans. So I have options now that are sufficient for me and my daughter to do whatever we need to do. But, you know, that just goes back to, again, grill. The whole point of having a grill is use your grill if you can, if you've got a grill. And they do make indoor grills as well. Get your fresh fruits and vegetables. Buy organic when you can. Clean them with vinegar and baking soda. You know, it's kind of like that season and that time. If you can plant 2 or 3 things, even if you're in an apartment or whatever, or you can grow some things inside, do that. Mm-hmm. You know, another topic is if you can do it from a financial standpoint is, you know, if you don't have a lot of land or a deck to have, you know, a raised bed garden or something like that, you can buy the towers, the hydro towers. You know, and grow food inside. And I have not tried that yet because I have space outside. But for in the wintertime, I would love to invest in one of those so I can grow food inside all day long, you know, all season long.
If I had the money, I'd have a personal chef and I'd have a gardener landscaper planting fruit trees and mint plants and you know, oregano and all the other kind of stuff there. I'd have limes and avocados. Oh, yeah, I've got plans. I just don't have the money for it.
Right. I get you.
Yeah, go ahead. Then I got a question.
No, go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, thank you. Because I'm still looking for an answer. Stainless steel versus ceramic, as far as cookware goes.
Ceramic has a coating on it. That's the whole point. It's trying to get away from the coating, on it.
Right.
Because even like, and you'll see the most popular one for healthy cookware. People will say, are the green pans? I'm sure you heard of the green pans, and you can buy a whole set of green pans.
Yeah, I've seen them, but I'm still suspicious. Just because it says green doesn't mean it is. That's why I'm asking.
Exactly. So I do have 2 of their pans. I use them sparingly now that I have the other stuff because I've talked to a couple of naturopaths, and they said, you know, lesser of the evils, they're pretty good. And so I have one little frying pan. Like I said, my daughter eats eggs. Sometimes she'll use that, but we don't. We use they're called spurtles, and they're actually made like of rubber and stuff, so it doesn't scratch anything. So again, that's my whole point. If you go in Google or research, green pans will come up, and it's a lower of the price range for the lesser of the better cookware. So if that's what your budget allows, then go buy 2 or 3 green pans. That's better than buying some of the other stuff.
Yeah,
you know? So,
I think I've got a stainless one because. Yeah, eggs don't seem to work in the cast iron skillet. I can't seem to make them work in that. They get all messed up. But steak and beef works fine.
We have a small little one that, you know, we use both the green pan and the cast iron skillet. So, you know, it works for her. But that's why I'm saying, you know, cast iron is more costly than a green pan. So you just do what your budget allows versus doing – you know, a pan that's going to not be good and have all of the bad stuff on it that's going to get into your
Maybe
cake,
I just need
you know?
More butter. Maybe I just need more butter in the cast iron skillet. I haven't quite used enough yet. I don't know.
Yeah, I use a lot I did it this morning. I was already cooking this morning. I was cooking like some turnips and some different vegetables.
Okay.
And I used my my clad, or not my clad. Which pan did I use? But I used one of my frying pans.
Uh-huh.
I just put in ghee butter. I used a lot of ghee butter.
Right.
So that works out really.
Yeah, and for those of that think, why are you talking about frying pans and cooking and things like that when there's so many big issues in the world and there's Ukraine and there's, you know, the national debt? The reason is because this is your personal health, and these are individual steps that you can take, you know, to get away from the factory food and away from all the stuff out there, and just little things that you can do that you don't need. You don't need the mass movement. You don't need to get everybody involved. Just do it yourself. And so this is why I like to bring it down to the individual level. This is why I have such variety on the show. Tomorrow, big day. Today, it's just us chatting. You know, that's kind of how
like I said, you know, we were taking it back to the whole food supply, talking about, you know, the eggs and what they're doing to the eggs, and talking about some natural ways to combat, you know, anything that you have going on in your body that shouldn't be there. Go get a diagnostic test if you need to, right? If you know you have arthritis and inflammation, you know, that's your choice to be popping Advils or a prescription, or to be diving into some of the non-inflammatory foods that can really help you. You know, and eating a grapefruit a day. Grapefruit is really, really good for cholesterol, for high blood pressure, for inflammation, and different things. You know, but just know your body, know your health challenges. I mean, we could scroll all day long on this. Like for me, certain foods are not good for me that may be good for you because I have kidney stones. So there's a lot of foods that I that are very high. There's a lot of foods that are very high in oxalates that I love oxalated foods.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me tell you my story on kidney stones. Yeah, let me tell you my story. I had a kidney stone. I was thinking at 40-some-odd years old, 40, 41, I was thinking I'm getting older. Of course, now I'm like 63, right? So at 40, I was thinking I'm getting older. I don't want as much calcium. I don't want to get a kidney stone. I better cut back on calcium. So this is my own self-diagnosis, and I was wrong. So I started drinking almond milk. I had soy milk at first. Then I found out I had plant estrogen, so that was out. So I went to almond milk. And I love grapefruit juice. Grapefruit juice is heavily oxalated, and it will actually give you kidney stones, as well as spinach. And so I'm eating a lot of grapefruit juice, drinking grapefruit juice, eating spinach, not having any calcium, and my body has calcium shortage. So what does it do? In response, it makes a kidney stone. Now I was actually on a first date, and I'm like dying of pain. I ended up on this poor woman's floor, you know, in serious pain. Went to the emergency room, the whole bit. Anyway, good sport. Never dated again, but, you know, we had one fun time. Anyway, but the point was that they said, okay, you're going to have to pass that now. I'm like, oh, no, do I really have to? Oh, yeah, it's going to hurt. Great, thanks. But what I found, I did some research. I said, what breaks up kidney stones? So I went online. Now that I'm getting smart, I went online. I found out that citrus breaks up kidney stones, but not grapefruit. So orange, lime, and lemon. So I basically drowned myself in orange juice, lime juice, and lemons, or actually real fruits. I had oranges, limes, and lemons in the house, and I ate a ton of them, and I actually broke up the kidney stone. It never had to pass. So, and ever since then, I started drinking milk and eating cheese and going back to dairy, and I've never had a kidney stone since, and that was over 20 years ago. So grapefruit juice and spinach and depriving yourself of calcium gave me a kidney stone. So even though you think you're doing the right thing, you know, self-medication can get you in real trouble unless you know what you're doing. So you got to read everything.
Right.
Yeah, that's my story. What's your story?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was born pretty much with a kidney disease. So I have both my kidneys, but both of my kidneys are just full of stones. And so I have to see a urologist and a nephrologist because every once in a while my son's 25. So when my son was probably 6 months old, I had what they called back then lipotripsy, you know, where they break up the stones and you can pass them. And I really should and need to have another one done. I'm just very nervous about going in and have any sort of procedure done right now. You know, I think it's getting better from what I hear of people going in, you know, for knee replacements and, you know, who have to have certain procedure done. It's getting better as far as no testing and this and that and the other thing. I just have really big trust issues. So I've been praying about when to have that next procedure done, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is why I'm very suspect when I had to do the colon check. And that's when I caught my cold. you know, my only cold after COVID. Mm-hmm. And my biggest fear was they're going to give me a COVID jab while I was out. And people said, well, that's irrational. It was not irrational. You don't know. They make money on those COVID shots. So I went to a place that had no COVID, you know, vaccine in the building. So they didn't do it. They had other things that they did. And so that wasn't an issue for me. And the health professionals were pretty cool about it. But, yeah, that was a concern. So I understand exactly what you mean. I'm glad I had my heart surgery in 2017 and didn't decide to wait a couple of years and do it in 2019 or 2020 because I may not make it out of the hospital. They would have put me on a ventilator when they filled my lungs with fluid from the blood centers, and they probably would have killed me. So, you
right.
know, God works in great
right.
ways, and I avoided that by getting my surgery done in a timely fashion. I had them drain the
right.
fluid rather than put me on a ventilator, and here I am. So, yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, as far as procedures go, like I said, if you have to have, you know, again, if you're in an accident and you got to have bone reset or, you know, you have heart challenge, whatever. I mean, there are times and places procedures, and if you have to have those procedures done, I think even though the medical community is still agenda and still sucks, I think going in for a specific procedure, I think the protocols and the process is getting a little bit better, only because they know that we know. Right, the healthcare workers know the truth now. They have released a lot of the stuff on, you know, you don't have to be tested for COVID unless you're running a fever and you're this, you know, you have signs or symptoms. You don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to this. You don't have to that. And so I feel personally a little bit better about that. My distrust
okay.
is, you know, when you're under anesthesia, you don't know what the hell's going on.
Well, that was my concern. You know, they could have jabbed me with anything.
Right.
You know, and I never thought about that with heart surgery, and I had a ton of different medicines, you know, and then been pain relievers and things. I actually rejected most of the pain relievers. And as soon as I had my blood thinner episode where I almost suffocated, and they wanted to put me back on blood thinners, I was like hell. So here's my question.
Right.
Overall, well, here's my observation. I want to know what you think. So overall, I think surgery generally goes well. I had brilliant heart surgeons. You know, the surgery went fine. You know, I was in great shape. I was actually on a ventilator because literally I was dead for 4 hours. So they have to stop your heart and lungs. So in that respect, they did a really great job. However, the drugs are, I think, where the problem is, because that's big pharma. And so the blood thinners and some of the painkillers, the opiates that I could have gotten addicted to that I purposely did not because I reduced my own amount, I think the real problem is the drugs. The actual surgery, you know, whether it's setting bones or doing colonoscopy checks or open heart surgery or things like that, the surgery part of it and the basic medical part is pretty good. But I think the problem is the drugs. I think that's where the system
yeah.
breaks down because there's so much profit in it. It's not regulated. You don't know what's in them. And I would include vaccines and drugs. So anything that's non, you know, hands-on, if it's not surgery and it's not practical medicine where they're actually doing something to you, with you, or things like that, but if it's just a drug, I think that's where the problems are. What do you think?
I would agree.
Okay.
I would agree. The problem is that, you know, there are some times when you need certain drugs. That's why, again, circling back. Is,
yeah, you got to be careful.
This is such a bad statement to say, but choose your poison, right? There are some times when you do need certain drugs. I mean, you
well,
just...
I'll tell you.
Just,
yeah, we're over time now, but just to take another minute or two, when they drained 3 liters of fluid out of my chest, they drained a liter and a half the first day, but the second day, they only want to take another liter and a half. And I said, you're going to take all the fluid out of my lungs. I'm not coming back here another day for another 6-inch needle on my back. So you're going to take it out now. And they hemmed and hawed. I said, you're going to take it out now. Okay. So they took out 3 liters of fluid, and my lungs had to reinflate. Well, there was no pain I've known like lungs reinflating. So, yes, I had an entire, you know, 500-milligram hydrocodone pill, and it was necessary because the pain of your lung inflating is excruciating. And I don't
right.
use that word loosely. Once it started to really hurt and the pain kept ratcheting up, it's like, okay, I'm going to take a full painkiller. This is necessary. But I only did it once, and in a few hours, I was right. fine.
Right. Right. Mm.
Anyway. Yeah. I get your last thoughts.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. I say if it's a beautiful weekend where you are this weekend, get out, do some planting, do some grounding, walk around, you know. Bare feet, wash your feet off when you come in. Don't step on any doggy poopy. And, you know, I mean, get outdoors, you know, and enjoy the beautiful weather. Go to a farmer's market. Maybe revamp your kitchen. You know, get rid of stuff. Throw things. I've been getting rid of so many stuff, or taking some stuff to Goodwill. You know, or donating to some things to people who just, you know, don't have anything. You know, all of these things have to do with your health. I mean, cleaning out is just a mindset of decluttering your mind. I mean, it's such a great feeling. So, you know, all the things. And if you need any resources at all, you know, you can reach me at h2owellnessnetwork@gmail.com. That's h2owellnessnetwork@gmail.com. And the HTMA, which are the hair tissue mineral analysis that I highly recommend everybody get. They are slightly discounted right now, and they are taking about an extra 3 weeks to get to people because of the high demand. There is a supply. It's not a supply issue. It's the fact that they are so high in demand right now with different issues that people are having, and people want to see where they are deficient. So if that's something that you choose to do, that's awesome. Just contact me, but know that there is about an extra 3 week delay on that.
Okay, good to know. Yeah, and I think we forgot the 20 detox foods. You want to race through those, or you want to save it for next week?
Oh, let's save it for next week. I've got it right here, so we'll save it for next week. And then I can also send it to you, which I will do right now.
Yeah, I can post it, and then I can get started. And I bet you half of them I'm already eating. I'll bet you, because I did research that. Yeah, okay. All right, CJ.
All right.
Thank you, darling. And all CJ's talking about the weekend. Good. I still have a show tomorrow, so don't touch your weekend quite yet. Anyway, I'm going to play a couple things for you and then give our closing music, and that'll be it. But this is a great show. Tomorrow's going to be fabulous. Tomorrow we've got a couple of great guests. And again, Tony Lyons, they keep switching the schedule on me, so I'll know soon after the show when exactly he's going to appear, but I'll put that on my show notes for tomorrow. And then, of course, the weekend's going to be crazy. I've got the Matt Gaetz meeting tomorrow evening, and obviously I'll be talking about that Monday. But who knows? I might make national news when I present my bill to him, and we'll see who's there. Besides me, and maybe we'll make a video of that. That's another project too. All right, y'all take care, have fun, enjoy yourselves, and please share the show, please share our bills, and become activists. There are no journalists here. We're all activists. Big, big difference. Main website, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, and our legislative site is writeyourlaws.com. All this is on the broadcast page. Our contribution site, givesendgo.com/actionradio. And my Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. And my public email, greg@writeyourlaws.com. And again, that's all on the broadcast page. See you all tomorrow. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road.
ask them about Firestone Tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.